Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, where we talk nothing but sports for the duration of the show. We got a lot to get to tonight. We have we'll take a preliminary look at the conference finals for both the NBA and the NHL. Granted, there are still a few semifinals that are still underway right now, actually, in particular in the NHL. We have the Vancouver Canucks in a 1-1 tie after one period of play with the Edmonton Oilers as the Canucks look to close out Edmonton in Game 6 tonight. And over in the NBA, we also have the Oklahoma City Thunder looking to tie things up in Game 6 with the Dallas Mavericks. But right now, Dallas is ahead 42-40. As Dallas looks to close out Oklahoma City there. But with that being said, we will look at the potential conference final matchups as we head into the conference finals. The NHL in particular, they have a few already decided as of yesterday. We also have the NBA draft lottery we'll take a look at, as well as there were a few signings that took place in the NFL, including one signing, which, my God, you want to talk about overpays. We'll discuss that, as well as, a little bit more later on as we go through tonight's broadcast. Just a reminder for Survivor fans, the Survivor recap show for Survivor Season 46. The final edition will be this Thursday night as we will recap everything that takes place in this upcoming Wednesday's finale episode to determine who will be this season's winner of Survivor 46. With that being said, though, how's it going, Lou?
All right, especially after, our series clinching went on Thursday night.
Right, yeah, that's right. The New York Rangers with a clincher thanks to, I believe, wasn't it a Chris Kreider hat trick?
Yes, it was.
That ended up sealing the deal there, which, I mean, you know, Kreider has always had the talent. I still remember from his early career where everybody was wondering why he hadn't taken off yet with his production. But Chris Kreider, you know, I can't really say it's a surprise that he's become a
Kreider
that he's become a playoff producer, because I used to watch him play for the Hartford Wolfpack, and or at one time they were the Connecticut Whale. Odd two seasons or so.
Who are the Connecticut Whales?
They were an NHL team. They're now the Hartford Wolfpack.
The minor league team of the New York Rangers. It was around the time when there was a dispute over whether or not they should return to the Hartford Whaler name, which they can't do that because of the fact that the Hartford Whalers are now the Carolina Hurricanes, I believe. So there was a pretty big dispute in Hartford over the Connecticut Whale name and whether or not they should have just remained the Hartford Wolfpack. But I do remember getting to see Chris Kreider play for the Connecticut Whale for about a season before he fully became a full-time New York Ranger. But his playoff experience, it hasn't surprised me at all. So,
Stu, did you always kind of sense that, like, you know, we're not like, you know, no scums, but like, we're all really good fans of sports. We can tell when someone has like that killer instinct, that potential. Did you see it, like, even when he was playing minor leagues, you're like, this guy could be really special?
Oh, I saw it even before he even got drafted, when he was playing for Boston College. You know, I saw the way he handles the puck. He had that sniper type of mentality when it comes to picking his shot.
Yeah.
Specifically in his final year with Boston College, before he ended up signing with the New York Rangers. And actually, if you remember, that first year coming out of college, he was actually a producer for them in the playoffs. He ended up putting up, I think it was like 5 goals and 8 assists or something like that, in his very first year without even playing a single game in the NHL season that year.
Sure. And then, like, we've seen, like, his career, whatever you call it, you know, trajectory year by year. He's always been selfless. He'll be like, he would play third line, first line, second line, fourth line, as long as he's helping the team win. I know it sounds corny, but, like, no, that's everything. For a playoff contender now, this is not high school or middle. Like, this is the major leagues. Like, a lot of people get there and, you know, they have defined roles. He's always adjusted to whatever the Rangers needed. He's always been the guy who will take a puck, like, in the shoulder blade of the face, like, block shots or kill the penalty kill. He's been, I think, Lou, I don't know if you'll agree, man. I think he's one of the best Rangers ever, quite frankly. If they go all the way, he could be a legend.
But I do think you're going to want other people to work with him as well.
He's approaching that status. He's on his way, I think.
Yeah, well, what about Minka?
Oh, him too. I'm not saying it's a one-man band. But, Kreider's proven, like, I mean, he's really one of the best Rangers ever.
I'll give you that, yes.
Yeah, so far this postseason, he has 7 goals and 3 assists in 10 games played for the Rangers so far this postseason. Now, obviously, you know, he's 33 years old. You know, who knows? I mean, he's probably got a few good years left in his career, but, you know, who knows how much closer the Rangers are ever going to get to the Stanley Cup for an opportunity at the Stanley Cup. And I'll tell you, you know, their matchup against Florida, it's going to be a very tough matchup for them. I forget if I said this to you last night, Alex, or if I said it to my, I might have said it to one of my coworkers, that it didn't matter. Even if Boston somehow upset Florida and advanced, they were going to get stomped by New York anyways. So,
right.
You know, but I think with Florida, though, it's going to be much different. With Florida, I mean, Bobrovsky, here's the thing. If the Rangers, and maybe this is the bitter Boston fan in me speaking here, but I really feel like if the Rangers can pepper Bobrovsky with shots, Bobrovsky so far all postseason has never had a a save percentage of above 90. It's been below 90% all postseason.
He's beatable. He's fouled.
He's a
star goalie for the Panthers.
Okay.
So Steve, I'm not saying, you know, throwing in winging a prayer like Bon Jovi from the blue line, but if they get quality chances, he can be beat.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just flat out admit it here. You know, obviously, we all know, you know, the Boston Bruins, nobody really gave them a shot to begin with against Florida. I was surprised they even made it to 6 games against Florida to begin with. But you know, the one thing in particular that I noticed with against Florida is if you can equalize their forecheck,
yep.
That was the big problem for Boston, was that they were out-muscled by Florida most of the time. If New York can neutralize that forecheck and also be able to pepper Bobrovsky with shots, because Boston had plenty of opportunities where Bobrovsky was dead to rights, and they just were not able to capitalize on wide open opportunities. Like literally, when I say dead to rights, I mean he's out of position. The goal is wide open. All you got to do is tap it in there. And wow. Boston, this is the thing with Florida, is that when they notice that Bobrovsky is out of position, they absolutely swarm the net. They swarm the net to make sure that Bobrovsky has as much protection as possible. So New York is going to really have to capitalize where Boston couldn't.
Crashing
in this in this matchup.
Yes. And Steve, it's going to be fascinating.
In my opinion, I would say yes. I think New York has a better opportunity compared to Boston because New York is a volume shooting team. When I say that, I mean they throw shots at the net. Even if they're not quality shots, you're still throwing shots at the net.
Yeah, it's almost, it sounds random, but it's almost like, the lotto or like playing slot. If you want to win something, if you're playing against a great throw as much as you can. After a while, there's going to be a loose rebound. You know, we saw that the series before against the Maple Leafs. The Bruins worked their butts off just to get to overtime. They threw it in off the back of the net, that rebound, boom, right to the guy. You're not going to score if you're not trying. I'm not saying Boston is trying, but the Rangers have to be ultra aggressive. And by that, I mean crash the net, Kreider, guys like that.
Yes.
You know, screen him. Be a total nuisance. Make life miserable for that goaltender. I'm not saying Boston didn't, but, the Rangers now know, okay, and you just illustrated it perfectly, Steve. That might be the way to beat them. Just pepper the net. You can never go wrong with shooting too much. Shoot a little more than you ever did.
Right. I mean, just don't be like Boston. Don't be like Boston where you're putting up, two or three shots in a single period. Because Boston, and this is, I'm gonna go backwards in time a little bit here because I found this kind of funny when Don Sweeney addressed the media before, I think it was before Game 5 or Game 6 this week.
Yeah.
Don Sweeney addressed the media and basically chastised the media for daring to talk to Jim Montgomery about a challenge that he did on a certain call that was made during the series. And Sweeney basically chastised the media, basically, talking about how dare you guys do your jobs. And ask the tough questions. Basically, Sweeney was afraid of being fined or suspended by the NHL. And for particularly what, I'll get to in just a minute, because Alex and I were talking earlier before the show, and there's quite the topic of controversy coming up that even came up tonight in this Vancouver-Edmonton game. And that's the topic of goaltender interference. But just to finish off with what Sweeney was talking about, not only did he chastise the media about doing their jobs, but also he then says, oh, but we're not a volume shooting team. So it makes them sound like, oh, the players that we have, our players don't f- fire shots at the net. But then you have Pat. But then you have Pat Maroon talk to the media next, immediately after, and he says, "Well, we need to do a better job of getting more shots." So basically, Pat Maroon completely contradicted what Sweeney said. That, you know, Sweeney basically said, "Oh, we're not a high volume shooting team." And Pat Maroon, meanwhile, it kind of seemed like Maroon was saying, "Well, we've been told to be more conservative. We've been told to not be aggressive."
Really?
That's kind of the vibe that I got out of it.
Yeah.
Well, the coach, obviously. But the coach would be in charge of that.
Let's all do the math. I mean, these guys come out.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Who's Young Sweeney? Is he the coach?
No, he's the GM. The coach is Jim Montgomery.
Yeah, so they're both kind of like the GM saying, "Oh, we're not really," and then the coach, "No, we are." Like, yeah, that's not, you don't want to hear too much talk like that, because then the players are like, "What?"
Yeah.
Let's bring it back to, like, who are going to win these games, especially at Game 6 or Game 7, guys? The players. They're coming up through the ranks, whether it's Providence College, Boston College, or in Russia, or Sweden. These guys are the best players in the world, right? We're not the YMCA. They could shoot 100 times a game if you told them to. So, yeah, I mean, you got to be able to adjust your play to different opponents. I think that's kind of weak by the, you know, they shouldn't have that crosstalk between the GM and the coach. The players are like, they want one voice. They don't want two different people telling them what to do.
And you know, the thing, too, is
the thing, too, is
in particular with the Bruins is they've been under Don Sweeney, they've been more of the, "Oh, we need to get the perfect pass. We need to make the perfect pass in order to fire a shot." You know, instead of, you know, fire at will. It's like, no, we need to, you may already make God knows how many passes before firing. But no, it's always, no, we got to make that one extra pass, which always ends up turning into a turnover. You know, it's kind of like what you sometimes see in basketball, where you see God knows, like five fast passes, and then, you know, the guy's wide open, but then he decides, "Oh, wait, I got to make that one extra pass instead of taking that wide open shot."
They taught me not to do when, at the same time, the person growing up was always taught to shoot that. Yeah, that's over-coaching or maybe over, I don't know, a different theme within that team. The GM saying, you know, if they're pass heavy in the playoffs, it's so hard to beat these goalies. When you have anything close to a chance, just shoot it. I mean, I've heard that from watching or playing any sport. Like, if you have a good shot, shoot it. It's so hard to score goals. You're never going to score if you overpass.
Right.
I'll go over
to the Rangers here. You know, the Rangers, their last game against Florida, they put up 24 shots, which, I mean, 24 shots, that's okay. You know, I would have preferred to see that out of Boston. You know, instead of one of the games, they only put up 15 shots on net. You know, you're not going to win a game. You're not going to outscore a team by putting up 15 shots.
No.
So, you know, and the thing with New York is, and this is kind of what gives me a little hope that maybe perhaps they could get past Florida, is you take a look at all the high firepower that they have over on that team with Vincent Trocheck, Artemi Panarin, Alexis Lafreniere, you know, Chris Kreider just got a hat trick. You even have third liners like Barclay Goudreau that are tipping in. Mika Zibanejad, Jack Roslovich, Alexander Wenberg. You know, you have a lot of talent on that Rangers roster. And, it's basically going to be, you know, who who can outwork the other team? And I'll tell you one thing. They may have their hands full with the Florida Panthers because
– aren't you?
Just based off of what I saw this series, Florida just out-hustled Boston in every aspect of the series.
I might be wrong, guys, but, like, I think Florida might have the edge with, like, maybe more defensive or, like, blue collar or, you know, hitting 50-50 pucks, maybe a little more physical, maybe more size.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, but I love what you said, Steve. The Rangers drafted these guys. 4, 5, 6, that's the beauty of hockey. It's like baseball. You see these like Rays or Red Sox pitchers that come up after 8 years. They know who these guys are from high school, even middle school. Like, these guys were born to score. The Rangers have a lot of goal scorers. If I'm the Rangers coaches, hey, withstand the blue collar, withstand the hits, don't get penalized, just outshoot them massively. Put the puck on the net 40 times a game. The Rangers have a lot of goal scorers that have always been goal scorers their whole lives. Can't overcoach them at this point. Just let them play.
Right. Exactly. And it is worth noting, too.
The Rangers have a lot of
graphics. I
was just going to say, the Rangers, they have to have the most, elite, I would say, goal scorers. There's not going to be a stat, but, like, minor league and draft picks. The Rangers have had a lot of top picks that have scored a lot of goals. It would lead me to believe, I think right now, that the most raw scoring potential to win a 5-3 game or a 6-4 game. So just obviously just you got to shoot more and more every night with these guys.
Right. And exactly in particular with Bobrovsky, who in my opinion, he's put up quite possibly, I mean, let me just double check here. But from what I can remember, Bobrovsky played a hell of a lot better last year during the playoffs than he has so far this year, stat-wise. Stat-wise, last year he had a save percentage of 91.5%, 2.78 goals against average, so that hasn't really changed. But the save percentage has definitely gone down. It's imperative for the Rangers to put up as much shots as they can against Bobrovsky. Because
you think from a coaching standpoint, you know, listen to me, I'm like Mr. Novice, Mr. Amateur. Like, it's easy to say, oh yeah, go shoot 100 times, and obviously the more you push the puck and crash the net, you're leaving yourself vulnerable. You're not paying as much attention to defense. Can they do that without leaving themselves vulnerable for the opponent to score 4 or 5 goals or, you know, 2 goals within 10 minutes? Like, can they push it without totally sacrificing their defense?
They can. It all depends on who they have pushing it. If they're working with two-way forwards who can get back just as quickly as they go forward, you know, then they should be fine, you know, when it comes to pushing the tempo while at the same time, they push the tempo, but then that's where you have to rely on your defense, your defenseman to stay in position, as opposed to, you don't want to see them crashing the net. Like, that's another thing. Florida's game plan is they crash the net. You know, all 5 of their players crash the net when they have when they're on the hunt offensively.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing that does worry me for New York, though, Shesterkin, I mean, let's be honest. Carolina is one thing with their offense. And obviously, New York. Who did they face in the first round?
Not Toronto. They faced Lou. Who did they face?
The Capitals. It was the Capitals.
Washington.
You know, the Capitals. Honestly, let's face it. The Capitals were nothing. You know, Ovechkin is easily their best offensive player. Carolina. Yeah. You know, that was a little bit of a step up. When it came to competitiveness, when it came to offense, But now you have Florida. Now you have Florida, though, which and Florida kind of worries me. If I was a Ranger fan, I would have rather faced off against Boston than I would have Florida. Because, oh, what a goal by Edmonton. That one just snuck by Silovs. Edmonton now up 2-1.
Oh, okay. Well, not to let me do join us. What's the biggest thing for against the Rangers? Steven, you know, I'll put it this way. Diane or, you know, me and Lou, being Rangers fans, what's the biggest strength of them that we should be most scared about? What's the biggest strength?
Of the Panthers?
Yeah.
Of the Panthers?
Yeah, exactly. Because every team has, a couple different, you know, oh, they could beat you here and there. What's the one thing we should really be like, wow, we got to focus on that?
Second chance opportunities.
Wow.
Florida absolutely swarms the puck wherever they are on the ice. If there's, you know, not only do you have to own the crease, but you gotta clean out the garbage, as they say. You gotta clear out the garbage.
Pick up the trash.
I would say the first 10 minutes, I'm not saying, you know, go overboard and, you know, create a WWE scenario, but hit everyone extra hard game one. If we lose game one, I'm not going to cry. But send some messages early on. No one's touching the Rangers, Chris.
And also be aware of potential dirty play by not just Sam Bennett, but also Matthew Tkachuk. Those are their two dirtiest players that they have on that team. That might I add, Sam Bennett. The reason why Brad Marchand missed a game was because Sam Bennett took him out with a concussion with what originally looked to be a hit with the stick, but really on the opposite angle, it was a punch. He sent him straight to the ice with a punch and hit it as if it was a incidental play. And the referees didn't make a call.
Marchand's tough as nails. I actually saw the replay on that. I'm like, dude, that's terrible. Yeah, Bennett's a shyster.
And the thing that gets me is that the NHL withheld this alternate angle from the Bruins until minutes before Game 5. They withheld that angle.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. They were showing that evidence. They were withholding that. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really.
I felt like that series overall, not to, like, you know, jump over the whole thing. Like, you're doing a great job dissecting each game by game, but I felt for some weird reason, and again, I'm still really learning my skills. Thanks to you guys. I'm really getting fully passionate about hockey again. I sensed it was like, it's almost like the league knew, like, Boston almost, I don't want to say lucky, because I think they earned that win with the Leafs. The last series was almost like the league and the refs, of course, everyone goes hand in hand, the commissioner, the refs. It's almost like they were like, oh, Boston really shouldn't be here. So every 50-50 call was going the other way, and I hate that. I felt like Boston got cheated a little bit.
Yeah. And here, you know what, it's funny that we bring this up, because now we're going to go into goaltender interference.
And oh, yeah.
Huge.
This has been a big thing. One of them that screwed over Boston in one of the games when they disallowed the – or when they A, disallowed – or wait a minute, no. Hang on. When they allowed the goal – from Sam Bennett, after Sam Bennett cross-checked Charlie Coyle into Jeremy Swayman. Swayman was unable to make an attempt at a save, and Bennett just knocked it right into the net. That should have been, per the rule, according to Rule 69 of the NHL rulebook. So basically, goaltender interference occurs when an attacking player makes contact with a goalie inside or outside of the goal crease, and the contact is deemed avoidable. Rule 69 of the NHL rulebook covers goalie interference, stating that an attacking player may not impair the goalie's ability to defend the net or move freely in the crease. The rule is based on the premise that an attacking player's position, whether inside or outside the crease, should not solely determine whether a goal should be allowed or disallowed. So, Dan Bennett cross-checked Charlie Coyle into Jeremy Swayman, which put Swayman out of position. Swayman was unable to try and attempt to make a save, and Sam Bennett basically got a free goal, essentially, which completely turned around that game because the Bruins were leading at that point in the game. Completely turned the game around. Florida ends up winning that game. And the NHL's excuse was that, oh, well, in order for it to be goaltender interference, we would have had to make a call immediately following the contact. We would have had, before the goal was put in, there would have had to have been a call for goaltender interference.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Which there wasn't. That right there is flat out, and you may call me a bitter Boston fan, but that is flat out bullshit.
I don't care if I'm a Blazer fan and I watch the Lakers get screwed, I'm gonna say, oh, that was terrible. It's part of our like integrity and our loyalty to being a good fan or a good podcast host or just being an honest, nice person. If you see something wrong, you gotta be like, you know what? I don't care what team I root for. That was wrong. I watched that, Steve. I'm like, that's egregious. And like you said, it's not small time. That was a pivotal point in that game. Not only the scoreboard, all of his teammates, the goalie himself, the fan. I mean, that turned everything right there. And you said it.
What a slap shot by Evan Bouchard. 3-1 Oilers.
So glad I never took that. Like I was saying that. I mean, Boston got screwed by that. The goalie interference has been a huge problem. And that's
right.
That's got to be sacred ground. I'm sorry. You know, obviously, a bit of an overstatement, but, like, I like different phrases like that. But, like, in different sports, like in soccer, on a corner kick, if you see someone, like, elbowing the goalie and coming up and heading it in, you can't do that. In hockey, like, it's like an unwritten rule. You can't go into the net. If a defender is tough enough as a goalie, to see 30, 40, 50 shots, 100-something miles an hour. It's such a tough sport, such a tough position. If your own players are getting pushed in the net, the refs have to call that. And obviously, no opposing forward or any position player on the other team can go into that net when there's a puck flying in. They have to protect that crease. Or else, what good are the rules if they're not gonna enforce them?
Right.
I mean, the thing is, ultimately, is that you must, a goaltender must be allowed to be able to make an attempt at a save.
Yeah. I was going to say, like,
and
I've never heard that. I was almost going to say just freestyling. I would say a goalie should be able to operate freely. And again, just like soccer, and I'm a lacrosse guy. But
right.
Goalies are so tough, like, people want to get in the crease to mess them up and help their teammates score. It's as old as the, however long sports have been around. You have to protect the rights of the goalie to operate freely and protect his net.
Right, exactly. And that obviously was unable to happen. And, you know, this was kind of the same thing with was it the next game or was it the game after? Charlie McAvoy had a similar situation. He had a similar situation where he attempted a shot and something ended up happening where basically Bobrovsky, he got kind of tripped up while at the same time, Bobrovsky was still able to stand and everything, you know, still able to attempt to make the save. But he got tripped up, and essentially what ultimately ended up happening was he got tripped up, and he ended up getting back into position, but then after getting back into position, his stick was then kind of slashed out of his hand by another stick. I forget who ended up doing it, but ultimately what ended up happening was, you know, McAvoy ended up scoring on that play, and they basically tried ruling that. My fear when watching that happen, I was like, oh, this is going to be taken back. And when this gets taken back, there's going to be an uproar from the crowd because, you know, I kind of figured that this is what was going to, you know, this was what was going to happen. You know, Boston was going to get, was about to be screwed over by the referee.
Yeah.
Ultimately that ended up not happening though. They ended up counting it, which, you know, I still find it kind of funny because at the same time, you know, that was kind of like a borderline call as to whether or not it was goaltender interference. You know, it was definitely a borderline type of call, but still, they ruled it as a good goal. Now, the same exact play that, that I mentioned involving Sam Bennett and Charlie Coyle, the same exact thing happened last night in Dallas's double overtime victory over the Colorado Avalanche. Dallas, they, in the first overtime, they were attempting a goal, which ended up being scored by Matt Duchene. However, they ruled it, the NHL ruled it goaltender interference because a member of the Colorado Avalanche shoved a member of the Dallas Stars into Colorado's own goaltender.
Happens every time.
When the goal was scored. So basically what they were saying was that Colorado wasn't able to attempt to make a save, even though it was their own player who pushed it into the net, who pushed the Dallas Star into the net. So, I mean, this whole thing, it's almost like an epidemic, so to speak, an epidemic of bad calls, and it really brings into question the integrity of the NHL as a whole. You know, because people could consider,
yep,
well, okay, so is this the NHL basically, is this the NHL, basically deciding, well, we want this team to win, so we're going to help out this team by making calls go a certain way. I mean, let's get your thoughts on this, Lou. What are your thoughts on the goaltender, the seemingly rash incidences of goaltender interference recently?
Yeah, there's been a lot of that going around. You have to learn how to make the calls right. I mean, that's what you're paid for. And then you got pulled something like a stupid act, like, nope, sorry, goaltender interference. It happened one game, I think, last year or whatever, because there was one game that was supposedly ended in the first overtime and went five overtimes because of somebody's stupidity. And, you know, it's going to happen again. It just seems like when the game was on the line, there's always going to be something that's being pulled the course of the game. So you really got, you really have to, you know, watch these calls that you make. You know, your lack of poor judgment, you know, is what's causing, you know, so many of these games and, you know, dragging them on and whatnot. So, you know, they really got, you know, sharpen up. Or you deserve to get left.
I mean, at some point, shouldn't a stand be made or something?
Yes.
When it comes to these, like, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some sort of lockout or something, because of players consistently getting screwed over, or not players, but teams.
I don't want to see it come to that.
In particular, specifically getting screwed over. Because of these calls.
I don't want to see a work stoppage. So,
I mean, Alex, what are your thoughts on that? You know, could we see a potential work stoppage somewhere down the line if this continues, you know, to grow out of hand?
You heard me typing like a feverish, like an intern secretary trying to prove her point. I was something actually I never heard from anyone. I was on a Mets post, and the announcer's wife was like, Lynn, like Alex Lott, she was talking to me personally on Facebook. I'm like, okay, I got to respond to her. The broadcast is him. No, I think overall, yeah. From that vantage point, I mean, it's never going to – they never wanted it to be a problem, but if it's going to be a repeat performance, no one wants to cry and spill, you know, cry and complain. And we all – we've said this for a couple of years. You guys both have awesome podcasts. We've always mentioned it. You never want to let the refs determine stuff like this because you don't want to go into the summer or, you know, when players like this retire, a lot of these players might be kicking ass. They might get injured or something happens or, you know, a lot of these players never get back to the, you know, a chance to get this close to the club. So, I mean, I think the number one role of a ref should be to go home safe, obviously, call it like they see it, don't favor either team. If you see something terrible, especially in the playoffs, if I were ever a ref in the playoffs, if I see some, like, gray area, like 50-50, I'm not calling it. Don't try to be a celebrity. Don't try to overuse your whistle. You know, I'm not the smartest guy on the block, but I know that. Try to stay out of the way. But now that it's becoming a problem, I mean, and I go back to this, you know, I don't know a ton about, but I know a lot about sports. I really do. Like, that's the one thing I've studied my whole life. I've always had a passion for sports. The one thing I was kind of good at, and the one thing I always watch every day is sports. So I know more than the average guy. I mean, we never want to see the refs get involved, and I always say, protect the goalie. It would be like if I was seeing someone in the playoffs for 2 or 3 years straight, or no, for like a month actually. If I was seeing Brady back in the day, or Dak Prescott, or Jalen Hurts, or whoever, McNabb, I don't care, whoever's playing in the playoffs. If the quarterbacks were getting hammered a lot, you know, and the refs were starting to call different things. I'm saying, I really feel like you got to protect the goalies. Because it's more of a gray area in hockey. Guys can coast in there. Oh, I got pushed in. Yeah. Now, if you're getting pushed in, if you're a defenseman, getting driven back into the goalie, I don't care if you're Fury or anyone, Wilt Chamberlain. You cannot prevent a guy from pushing you into the crease. The refs have to be able to read that situation. And it's not an easy job. But I really don't like this recent theme, this phenomenon, this really bad fad of falls. Oh, yeah, you know, no goal or, oh, penalty. I guess I'm trying to stay in a convoluted way. Just long story short, like, it never used to be this big of an issue. I don't like, and now it's becoming more and more of a reoccurring thing. You can't change it during the playoffs. I think you'll see a rules change. You know, Bet we have a fault to them. He's not that stupid. They'll figure something out in the offseason. Right now, they can't change rules during the playoffs. This has never been that big of an issue, but it's a glaring, it's bright lights flashing. It's become a big issue suddenly. And now teams are starting to push the envelope. They're trying to catch it. Oh, if they did it 2 nights ago to me, if I'm flying in and it's third period tied, yeah, I'm gonna hit the goalie a little bit and see if I can get away with it. So they gotta you know, get this under control. It's become an issue.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah, and in some cases, you're starting to see you know, you're starting to see players take it, or not players, but teams take advantage of it. You know, with stuff like that.
You see a coach or a teacher, you know, when we were in fifth grade or seventh grade, we never wanted to cause trouble. Oh, that person did that. Oh, maybe I can do that next Tuesday. They got to put the put the hammer down, put the kibosh on it. If I'm competing for a challenge, and if the guy I got beat by it 3 nights ago, whether it's Boston or the Kings or the Oilers, if they did it 2 nights ago and my team lost, you're damn right. I'm not looking for it, but if I'm in that situation, I'm going to do the same thing. Because if the ref didn't call that, hey, now I feel like I got a freebie. Why not me? I can do it too.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, we hate to, you know, they shouldn't have that much power, but the refs have the ultimate power. They have to be the ones to put the hammer down.
Ultimately, yeah. That's what has to be done, is pretty much, something has to be done, and
mm-hmm.
otherwise you're just going to see, you know, multiple instances of this take place. Every opportunity, that somebody gets. Now, you know, going back to New York and Florida for a second, what do you guys think heading into this matchup? Is there reason to be worried? You know, if you're obviously you got my opinion on it, but is there reason to be worried? You know, if you're a New York Rangers fan, you know, for somebody or for a team that finished atop the Eastern Conference this year, should fans of the New York Rangers be worried?
There's a little bit of concern because, you know, Florida is a tough team. I mean, they did go all the way to the finals last year. They lost, of course, to Vegas, but they know how to play tough. And, with their goaltending, it does kind of worry me a little bit. But I think the Rangers still beat them, but it is not going to be an easy series whatsoever. You know, we're going to have to work that out for us. But, we have to learn to play smart. And if Panarin, Igor, Brighter can all stay for another game, yeah, I think we can pull it off because we also have a very good lineup. And it's got to be a case of, is it the best offense or is it going to be the best defense? So, that's what it's going to come down to. And it all starts Wednesday.
Well, what are your thoughts, Alex, on the, on Florida and New York? Do you think there's a reason to be worried for Ranger fans who are looking to finally get back to the Stanley Cup playoffs for the first time since Henrik Lundqvist?
Oh, man. Terrific question, Steve. I mean, I think it all comes down to it, not to sound like an answer a fourth grader would come up with, but, like, I think when, Barry Melrose or any like, true hockey guru could, Wayne Gretzky, Mark Messi could look at this and say, if these guys actually, I think it's going to come down to, the biggest thing, like you said, though, finishing, really getting to this goalie. I think overall, there's two really talented teams. The Rangers haven't been back here in a while. They know their fans and everyone and their brother and sisters back home are all rooting for them. Yeah. If they're trailing 2-0 in game one, and they lose, not the end of the world. If they come out flying, awesome. I don't think game one's going to determine it. But I think overall I said it on Lou's show. I really don't think – I respect all Lou's callers. I really don't think it's going to be a sweep. No way. I mean, you got to get ready for a little bit of I never like to say war because, some true heroes in our country have fought real war. No sports series is going to be a war. Other veterans out there have fought real wars. But it will be a battle. I think it's going to go 6 or 7 games. So I think it's going to come down to crashing the net. it's going to come down to crushing it. Yeah, I mean, I'm a little biased, but I do think this is the year. You know, you never want to fall into a 2-0 hole, but we've seen that. That's not insurmountable. Overall, I mean, I feel like this is the Rangers' year. My one question I always had, and this dates back to when I first met you, you know, thanks to through Lucy, I always said, hey, the Rangers always have scoring. Can they keep it out of the net, and obviously can they limit the penalties? Is their defense good enough? Now you're talking about, you know, their opposition now, they're going to be crashing the net. It's going to come down to defense. I don't want to have to win 5-4. I'd rather win 2-1 or 3-2.
Right. I mean, it's. I think it's possible that you could end up. It's probably going to be a very tight series, regardless of, you know, how many, you know, regardless of how many goals. I don't really get that feeling that it's going to be, you know, that you're going to see 5-2 or. You know, so on and so forth. I don't get that feeling of, oh, we're going to see, you know, we're going to see blowouts left and right in this series.
That leads me back, and not to try to overtalk it, that, you know, you guys are always kind of showing me the way with hockey. Does that favor them or does it favor the Rangers? If it's going to be like a bunch of 2-1 or 3-2 games, who's got the better defense? Because if you're talking defense, yeah. We got to look at the defense.
You know what? That's a good question.
Yeah.
If it's going to come down to that, we got to look at the personnel. You know, if you're telling me, oh, you know, whatever. I hate to mention them because they haven't won dick lately. But, like, if you're talking Eagles, like, if you're coming down to defense, I'm like, oh, I'm scared. So it sounds like the Rangers can score a lot. You know, the Rangers got hurt and
so.
They have plenty of scoring. Do they have the defense?
I mean, honestly, you know, I'm taking a look at both sides. And right now I would just say stat-wise, as far as plus-minus goes, Florida has the edge when it comes to plus-minus on defense. You know, Aaron Ekblad is a +6. So basically, for people who don't know, plus-minus means, like, how many times are you on the ice for when a goal is scored against you or a goal is scored for your team? You know, Aaron Ekblad is a +6. Gustav Forsling is a +8. Brandon Montour is a +4. Oliver Ekman-Larsson is a -2. But you look at the Rangers, you know, Rangers, Trouba is a +2. Aaron Fox is a +1. Kevin Miller is or Keandre Miller is a +4. Gustafsson is a -2. And then there's a couple of evens with Schneider and Lindgren. I would say defensively, I would probably give the edge to Florida. Just simply because they have the bigger names defensively. I mean, it's going to be – I have a feeling this could be a grinded-out type of series. And, I mean, I hate to be the bearer of bad news for Ranger fans, but I would be kind of worried. against a team like Florida. They're the type of team – that's all about grinding it out.
Yeah. It's going to be a dogfight. This is the biggest, I mean, duh, I sound like a third grade. This is going to be the biggest Rangers series in, what, Lou? Not since 94, but maybe?
Right.
This is the biggest spotlight on the Rangers since 94. Am I wrong?
Yeah, because, you know, I had, you know, doubts. I have doubts about this too. So it does.
I'm
it
saying
it's
a good way, though. Oh, Lou, sorry, bro. To clarify, let me make myself a little clearer. I'm sorry, I missed. Probably a lot of people misunderstood what I said. I'm saying from just overall, this is the biggest chance. Maybe I should say that. Not pressure.
Yeah.
Like, This is the biggest spotlight they've been on under since 94. They're on center stage.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, these guys.
Even 2004, we went to the finals that year, too.
They might have watched it on DVD, or maybe they met Mark Messier or, you know, Brian Leach, mm-hmm. you know, in the or Mike Richter. They got an honor, but, like, now it's their time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that pressure is huge. And playing in New York, guys. I mean, obviously, we all know that. But, like, these guys are built for it. I mean, Kreider, he's got to be, like, the leader. I know he always is, but, I mean, I think every game in this series is going to be a one-goal game. Last series was no cake. Come on. They won, what, two OT games last series. They're not accepting, they're not gliding through or hanging out. Like, this is a battle. It's only going to get tougher.
Absolutely.
I think they're built for it. Time will tell. I think Chris Kerr, I think the GM put together a damn good team. I really do. See what they get.
I'll just tell you right now, though, this is a type of team that is built for grinding it out. As far as the Florida Panthers go, they're the type of team that's meant to be a grind it out type of team. So that's definitely going to be something to keep an eye on. Specifically with this series. But I think if New York can balance out the forecheck as well as, just start to pepper Bobrovsky with shots. You know, put more pressure on Bobrovsky than the Boston Bruins did in their series. If you can keep that pressure on Bobrovsky, I think there's a good opportunity that you could see the Rangers come out on top here.
Now is he every goalie, every athlete in the world, every human's fallible. They can get emotional and start crumbling a little bit. Is he capable of giving up two or three goals game one, and they hit him for five goals, and then it's like the Rangers in five, or is this guy like a brick
wall? He did give up. Just to give some perspective here, he did give up five goals against Boston in Game One, and then he settled down the rest of the series.
And you were saying before, interesting point, Steve. So you were saying before, though, maybe they didn't, take the pedal off the metal, but they kind of slowed down with the shots. Rangers got to hit him every night with 30, 40 shots.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's the number one thing that you want to look for if you're a Rangers fan. You don't want to see any sort of hesitation whatsoever from the Rangers. If they have the opportunity to hit, they hit early and they hit often.
Yeah, it's a cliche. It's easier said than done, but it's so important in sports. If you're playing Mahomes. Jump up 17. Don't kick a field goal the first drive. If they can get to him two or three goals in game one, period one, that's huge emotionally for the rest of the series. Because even if they don't maintain that for games two or three or four, they know in the back of their minds during these intermissions, during these nights off, they can get to him. Starting strong against him, it's going to be huge. I feel like there's going to be more pressure on them because they haven't been there in so long. So it's not necessarily the guys like Kreider. Those guys will run through a wall. They want it.
Right.
They want so bad to make Ranger fans happy. They want to be the next Messier or Gretzky. They know those guys are watching. But, they can't feel like too much pressure. That's an emotional series, man, for Ranger fans, for everyone, It's going to be huge.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, Steve. It's been a long time coming. I mean, Boston's felt more success recently, obviously. I mean, Rangers are back, but, like, if they go again, if they lose again, I'm sorry. It's going to be like, oh, yeah, they're still not back. They still have to do it right now.
Yeah, it's going to be it's a big opportunity for the New York Rangers, and they're really going to have to – they're going to have to find a way to capitalize on it if they want to – you know, if they want to, like I said earlier, this is their best opportunity that they've had since the Henrik Lundqvist years, where they ended up losing in the Stanley Cup Finals that one year with Lundqvist. This is the perfect opportunity. This is maybe the best opportunity that they've had to reach the Stanley Cup Finals once again.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Did you guys feel like, kind of a loaded rhetorical question, like no series is over after one, but would game one mean a lot more to them? If they come out and like lose an OT game one, is that deflating or is it like, do you think that'll
play
like kind of
series
or?
Well, I think losing in overtime regardless is deflating, regardless of of what game it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think it's definitely deflating, but you know, obviously winning game one is very important because it puts you in control for the rest of that series.
Because you can split and then you can go there and split.
Yeah,
like you're 21. You can play with house money the next game. Obviously, you want to build that, but yeah, once you get up one, you're in the driver's seat. Would it mean more?
Right.
This regular series, just because they haven't been this close. I mean, I'm just thinking they got to be feeling more pressure than the opponent.
Yeah, you know, I'll put it like this: if you're New York and you've built a team like this, and you don't end up, you don't end up going to the Stanley Cup Finals, then at some point you're going to be like, okay, if we built this team and we still can't make the Cup Finals, when are we ever going to make the Cup Finals?
Yeah.
You know, it's for example, it's kind of like the Boston Celtics, where, you know, they have a golden opportunity this year. You know, they await the winner of the Knicks and Pacers for Game 7. And you know, it's almost kind of like, okay, if you're not going to if we're not going to win the NBA title this year with this roster, when will we ever win another NBA title?
Great comparison. They've been close. Now they have Porzingis, you know, Derek White, you know, they've these guys stepping up. The Rangers and the Celtics are both on fire. And I totally agree. I'm never a pessimist. I don't trash my own team, but I call it like I see it, man. You called it on Lucia. You said, oh, yeah, what, three wins, Patriots?
Yeah.
You're fine with that because they're building for the future. We all have to be realistic.
Yes.
But, yeah, I mean, if they lose this year, I'm not going to be holding my breath. I'm not going to be, oh, yeah, guys, I'm not going to be talking to people at a restaurant or wherever I work going, oh, yeah, the Rangers will be back next year. They got this far. They got to capitalize on this. It's hard to get back
there.
Their goalie, Panarin, Kreider, something could happen with injury. You never know how long you might not never get back to where you are.
Exactly. You know, it's like I said. You know, this is the closest that they've gotten since the year that they went with Lundqvist. And it's like, yeah. So it's like if you can't win this year, you know, when's the next time? You don't know when that next opportunity is going to be. So at some point, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if New York ends up falling short again this season, you almost have to look at your team and be like, are we not, what is wrong here? Is it the coaching? Is it our, the players that we put out on the ice, you know, that you could see potentially, and it's hard to imagine me saying this about a team that just made the conference finals, but
you're being real.
You could potentially see changes made.
The questions are going to be there. And I hate saying that. Oh yeah, you know, I'm from Connecticut. I went to school in the Midwest. My parents from the Midwest. They had me. They met in New York. They had me in Connecticut. And then, now I live in New York. I'm visiting mom and dad. So, like, when I'm saying, oh, New York, I'm not trying to brag, like, oh, it's, but it, now that I'm here, like, you know, I respect it. It is, like, but it's the most it's the most concentrated, it's the most pressurized. There's a million media members. There's a lot more people at these games that are screaming. There's a lot more people on the streets in New York, any color, wearing hockey jerseys or football jerseys. It's just the way it is. So, like, the pressure is so much more intense on these players. That's why you guys see it all the time. A lot of players go to New York, and they go to, you know, the Minnesota Twins, the St. Louis Cardinals, and become a Cy Young pitcher. But in New York, they suck. It is such a microscopic you guys don't understand. There's so much pressure, dude. On a random Tuesday night.
Right, and it's the same in Boston, too.
Yeah, and Steve, you can relate to that. I wasn't saying we were better. I mean, both two of the best cities in the world. It's so much different. I was leading to my next point would be the other team has a lot less pressure. They really do. They're not worried about the New York media or the fans. Like, they can just go in there and play hockey. It's always dangerous when these New York teams get to, like, the Knicks. I think the Knicks are kind of, like, fearless. They don't really care. The Rangers, they're feeling that pressure. Because no one expected the Knicks to be this good. The Rangers, a lot of fans have been waiting for this for the past 10 years.
Right.
The Knicks are like a luxury. They're like, holy shit, they're good again? There's, like, casual fans in a bar in Manhattan going, oh, we're watching the Knicks.
Uh-huh.
They haven't been good since Ewing. The Rangers fans have been waiting year after year. We're always good. It's like, we're finally here. They better freaking do it. They have a lot of pressure on them. It's different.
We're always right. In New York.
Now, going over to the Western Conference Finals, we have, of course, Vancouver and Edmonton in Game 6. Edmonton leading 3-1 right now. Assuming they potentially push it to a Game 7, who do you have prevailing in a potential Game 7 in Vancouver between the Canucks and the Oilers?
I want to see the Canucks.
Luis, hold on. That 94 dream, I love it.
Yeah, one that I have for a rematch.
Because
I mean,
that winner will then take on Dallas for the Western Conference Finals.
Dallas has been teaching me wrong and making me look like a schmuck. Whoever I pick against turns to gold. So I don't even know if you want my pick. I'm thinking Edmonton tonight, and then, but I think overall, McDavid's still going to fall short.
McDavid still falls short regardless?
I think he's awesome, and I grew up loving hockey when I was actually good enough to play, like, you know, just like youth. I love Gretzky, you know, 99, all that stuff. That's when life was easier. Like, I used to love hockey when I was, like, up until, like, sixth grade. So I fell in love with the Oiler, you know, Grant Fear I loved. All those old school guys, Kevin Lowe, Kikkinen, all those guys. Edmonton, so I don't think they have it. They can act like they do, but I don't see that killer instinct. I wish I was wrong, but because honestly, guys, I don't know enough. You know, now I do, but like I'm fast learning about. I'm watching other games every night now. All other sports, I was cool. You guys brought me into hockey more and more. But, like, from what I'm seeing, Edmonton has, like, the stats. They have the back of the hockey cards. They have all those numbers. Other teams just outworking. I don't see that, like, blue-collar. A big thing for me, you guys know from any sport, is defense. I don't see that defensive, like, that rugged hockey. You got to be tough. You got to protect the crease. I see Edmonton, they can score a goal. They can let up a goal 80 seconds later or 17 seconds later. So I don't – it's, like, flimsy. It's not as consistent. They can score 5 goals. They can give up 6 goals. I don't quite trust that.
Right.
I don't think it's their year. I don't think it's their year.
So, okay, let's put it this way then. So let's say the Western Conference Final is Dallas and Vancouver. Who do we have prevailing there to make it all the way to the Stanley Cup Final? You know, could Vancouver do it for the first time since 2011, or can Dallas finally get over that that hump that they've been trying to climb?
Lou, you going to finally go against your pick of the 94?
I'm sticking with them. I'm sticking with my prediction from the beginning.
Stick with it. You go down to Blaze of Glory like Jon Bon Jovi. Pick with your head, not your heart.
That's right.
See it or not?
I'm sticking with what I said. I'm not turning back.
Hey, you're a loyalist. I love you. Steve, I'm seeing it. Dallas, this team is just nasty. They won't go away. I mean, I couldn't shoot a layup in basketball. I've always loved defense. That was the position I could play. I just try to work as hard as anyone and just fit in. But I see Dallas as like a blue collar. They'll just do like the dirty work. So Dallas is not going to go quietly. I think Vancouver might, like, man for man, they might be a little bit more talented. I'm picking Dallas.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting in regards to
man for man, they seem like they're a tougher, like, more blue-collar team.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's very interesting when you match up Dallas and Vancouver. You know, one of the things you have to consider is, number one, Vancouver, assuming if they get past the Edmonton Oilers here, they're going to have a potential goaltender issue of who to go with. Are they going to go? Will they go with Artur Sylovs, who has gotten them to this point? Even though, granted, you know, they did this because of the injury to Thatcher Demko. You know, will they stick with Artur Sylovs, or will they potentially go back to Thatcher Demko whenever he is officially fully healthy, considering Demko is the starter? And then also at the same time, you know, you look at Dallas. You know, Dallas, they have the history. You know, Tyler Seguin, he won a Stanley Cup with the Boston Bruins back in 2011. You know, so they definitely have some Stanley Cup veterans on that team. Guys who have experienced the grind before. So
I was just gonna say, Steve, I'm sorry, man. I think it's such a cool quick topic to focus in on real quick. Either one of you guys change out the goalie now? Like, for me, if this goalie got me to where we are now, I don't care if you're obviously not Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant, but if my goalie right now is red hot and getting us this far, I could never live with myself a month or 2 years or 20 years later going, well, we went back to the old guy. Like, if we're red hot, I don't care. I'm sticking with my goalie. Like, ride him till the end. Would you guys make the goalie change at this point? So crucial.
The only way I would make the goalie change is if it's, you know, by far, like, oh, this is a, say you were getting back, like, Patrick Waugh from the 90s, for example, or Martin Brodeur.
Yeah.
Unless your goaltender is, like, among the elite.
The man.
Which, I mean, Demko, Demko this year, he is in the running for the Vezina Trophy. But at the same time, you know, he hasn't really, I don't feel he has gotten to that elite status yet. So I don't know if I would necessarily go immediately back to Demko. I mean, if Sylovs gets you past, if Sylovs gets you not just past the Nashville Predators, but also now potentially the Edmonton Oilers, You gotta ride the hot hand. It's the same. It's the same thing with the Boston Bruins. You know, the Boston Bruins, they had two number one goaltenders in Jeremy Swayman and Linus Ullmark, and it's like, well, what do you switch? You know, do you rotate goaltenders? Or do you go with, you know, who had the better regular season? What do you do? And, you know, it's kind of what Jim Montgomery did was he played both goaltenders one game, and then he made a decision from there, which ended up, of course, being Jeremy Swayman.
And some people might say, a game too many. Like, I know he made a good, like, coaching decision. He's a lot more qualified than any buzz on the bus like me is. But, like, for me, I'm like, okay, you gotta know who the guy is. Swayman, to me, like, this guy's awesome. I know he's not going to be Grant Fury. He's not going to be, like, Billy Smith. Like, you know, first out of Hall of Famer. But I became a huge fan of him. I'm a Rangers fan. If I see someone working hard and, like, playing incredible, I'm going to root for the guy. I'm a human first. I'm a fan second. This guy earned his job tenfold. So I'm seeing if this other team gets all the way, like, if they advance again, can you imagine if they pull him and the other goal is, like, decent, but they lose a couple games? Mentally, the rest of the team's like, coach, we just got here because the other guy, they're whispering in the locker room. Dude, it throws off chemistry. If you're red hot, you do not, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean, if they made that change and they go down 2-0 in the next series, the coach could be walking up a bridge somewhere behind a bar going, I messed this up. Like, let it go. If you're driving 80, why are you changing, like, gears? Just stay smooth. Your team's doing great. Do not switch a goalie. I mean, that's a catastrophic decision. There's no upside to it. If the other guy keeps winning, you're safe. But if the other guy gives up three or four goals and you lose the first couple games, you can always bring the other guy back. Mentally, the other guy's pissed off. His teammates are like, how do you change it? I mean, that's got to be the toughest decision. The toughest change. It shouldn't be a tough decision. That's going to be a tough change. I just wouldn't make it. If I'm a coach, I'm leaving this guy in the net. Do your thing. I'm worried about the rest of the team.
Right, yeah. That's definitely something that you really have to think about, you know, moving ahead in particular is – you know, what exactly is going to – what exactly could your decision have – what fallout could there be from your decision, basically?
Yeah. And, Steve, I love what you said. You know, obviously, in a week or in 3 days or whenever they play next, if they do a bit, you know, I agree with your point. Like, the next – like, if he gives up four or five goals, maybe he can do that. Or if they're in a hole. But, like, right now, don't change a damn thing. Sports is, like, hard work, and it's some luck, too. If you have a new guy, Nick Foles, look at him. No one expected that. He could never start for the Chiefs or the Jets or anyone. If someone has a good ride where they have energy and momentum, the whole team's feeding off it, do not change it. That's the worst thing you do as a coach. Just ride it out. It's called luck at times.
Yeah.
You know, if that guy's great, just don't even question. I don't care about numbers, contracts, or if he's best friends with the owner. No one's removing this goal. This goal is going to stay here until the Stanley Cup. I mean, that's the way I would think about it.
Right. Yeah. It's one of those situations where you basically just have to make that decision and you just have to keep it that way.
Yeah.
Where
if he gets destroyed, you can pull them, but, like, until that happens, ride the hot hands. It's the basics of any, you know, team.
And the win.
Ride it out. If we're winning, I'm not changing a damn thing.
Exactly. There would be no reason to. You know, there would be no reason to make any sort of change.
Imagine the fallout if he pulled them or if he made the change. If that went south and they got lit up and they lost, dude, that coach would be like looking for a job in Albania. Like, come on. not a bad place, but not the best place. Like, dude, keep the hot hand in. Keep your job safe.
Yeah, so, I mean, it should definitely, I think it'll be a very interesting, and by the way, Edmonton's now up 4-1, so they are probably going to force a game 7 here in Vancouver. So that should be very, very interesting moving forward just exactly what may result from this.
Steve, real quick, Lou, you'll get a kick out of this. I'm like, hey, I'm in outside camp. I'm hanging out. It is what it is. It's not the best thing or the worst thing. I'm like, hey, I'm hanging out at my mom's place. You know, I'm like, hey, I want to, you know, bet a couple bucks. I was torn on Dallas. Steve's like, Edmonton. I didn't take Edmonton. So now, of course, Edmonton's going to score about 12.
Yeah,
I'm like the opposite of Lady Luck.
Start my life. Tonight.
There you go.
Well, I mean, I did tell you, Alex. I did tell you.
Well, you had me watching the period before. I'm ADD, but I was doing about 9 things. I fell in love with boxing again. But, yeah, I couldn't get this. You were like, oh, Edmonton just scored. I'm like, damn.
Yeah, Ryan Nugent Hopkins from Connor McDavid, who, by the way, 3 assists tonight, now puts his assist total for the playoffs up to 19 assists. So instead of scoring, he's doing more of the helping this playoff run for the Edmonton Oilers.
That's the beauty of hockey. You get credit for those secondary assists like no other sport. He's doing the other thing.
I guess you still put up RBIs in baseball.
Exactly. Or sack bunts or, double steals, all that little stuff. And think about this, guys. That helps players when they're, like, 9 years old or mostly, like, 14, 17, 18-year-olds. Basketball, you wonder why the international sports, a lot of the top players from Luka to Wembanyama are overseas now. They practice 6 days a week. They play one game a week. Look at basketball right now. They play, like, 6 days they play, like, 4 games in a weekend. They hardly practice. They're working on dunks. Talking to agents, like, dude.
You know, this brings up a point that I brought up in a previous show, where now if you're Artur Šilovs, and you know, here's another thing. If they go to Game 7, which it looks like they're going to, and let's say Thatcher Demko is ready to go for Game 7. You could realistically make the decision to switch immediately back to Thatcher Demko now. Because here Artur Šilovs, you know, this is a rookie who literally is being thrown into a situation where, okay, you have to take over for our elite goaltender who is out with an injury. Not just that, but also our backup is out with an injury as well. You're basically being thrown into that situation as a rookie. It's okay. You can swim with the Sharks for as long as possible, but eventually, you know, you're going to get bit and, you know, it is going to catch up to you. And I think that might be what's happening to Šilovs right now. It's like, okay, you know, the players, they've gotten the opportunity to kind of study you a little bit, you know, to determine, okay, where's your weak points?
Exactly.
Like a stud
pitcher come up to the minors. This guy throws 99. Awesome. So many people that will never watch on TV threw 99, and they got contracts for the Yankees or the Rays or the Red Sox or the Devil, whoever. But, yeah, no, when you can see a lineup 3 times through, like 6 innings, 7th innings. Like you said, Steve, now they're kind of studying them. Oh, we see a couple weaknesses. Yeah. Now they're hitting those weak spots. Maybe the thrill is gone. The ride's done.
Yeah.
And you know, not just that, but also But also, when you think of it, the fact is, you know, there's more pressure. There's more pressure the closer you get to elimination, to, you know, eliminating a team, there's more pressure. And, you know, you really get to see the type of player that a player is based off of how they act when they're under pressure. Now, granted, that may be a lot to ask out of a rookie. That may be a lot to ask out of a rookie, but, you know, going back to what we were talking about with goaltending and, you know, when's the time to make the switch, I'll tell you one thing. If Thatcher Demko is healthy for Game 7, you may want to think about switching back to Demko.
I'll walk it back. I didn't realize if he was healthy. No, I'll totally take back what I said. I have no shame. I'll go forward like strong words. But if I quickly realize, wow, you know what? If he is healthy, and the biggest thing for me is if he's getting lit up. It's like, you know, Doc Gooden or Pedro Martinez, not guys like that, but like if a rookie were coming up and they were pitching on fire and then they got lit up their last time out of on the starting mound, I'd go back to that other guy even if he were a little bit injured. I'd rather go down in flames. I'd rather go down losing. And everything's screwed. If I'm going down, I will go down with the more trusted person that I've seen, that I've been with to war with. Like, if my teammate's healthy, I would trust him more than a rookie. These guys have never been through, like, it is kind of like warfare battle. I mean, the stage now, guys, there's 5, 6, 12 times more people watching these games than a regular hockey game. Let's be honest.
Right.
Playoff hockey is total, and not only that, playoff hockey is a different breed. I'm not downstating. I love hockey. But, like, NBA, there's a lot more hyper pressure on these guys. So, yeah, I mean, I walk it back. I would go back to the other guy. Because this guy's getting lit up now. And now it's like, okay, you know what? Let's go back to the veterans.
Yeah, and by the way, speaking of
– Lou, would you go back to the other goal or not?
No, like we said, if I'm broken, they'll fix it.
We're talking about Demko.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't change anything.
Tough decision, man.
Well, I mean, there is a case to be made that maybe perhaps this is just one. You're also, by sticking with Silovs even after this blowout, you're still showing. You know, you're showing
his teammates
trust. You're showing trust.
His teammates would like it. Keep him in there. His teammates will like it.
We don't believe in him to keep you going.
We don't believe in it. Like, it was a great run, guys. We're going to suddenly go back to the old guy, like, who was not here. They're building something. It could be magical. Yeah, they don't want to change. But I'm all mixed up. Like, there's two great sides. Like, there's two arguments to be made for both sides. I don't think I would change it. If I'm going to lose, let me lose the guy who got all the way here.
Right. I mean, yeah, there's definitely an argument to be made for either way.
And that's going to talk to, you don't think certain like people in sports that, I mean, they'll pull them on an all-nighter. They'll have the owners, revenue stakeholders. They'll be like grandmas on the phones tonight, tomorrow. That decision will be talked about with like 17 different people. And ultimately the coach is going to have to, he's going to put his head on the guillotine and he's going to make the decision. But yeah, that's going to be that's tens of millions of dollars each round they advance. So it's not going to be some random guy, you know, in a rink going, let me stick with this guy. So the coach has to be firm. Because if the coach is undecided, then someone else is going to make the decision. And then his job's out the door. He's got to come up with a plan.
Right.
Like, you know what? I like this guy. If he's not firm, if someone else makes the decision and it blows up, he's fired. If someone else makes the decision and it works, they're still probably going to fire the coach. He's got to be like, no, this is my guy.
Yeah, ultimately, you know, it really all depends. It really all depends on, you know, who will be able to rise up to the occasion, basically.
We've seen this everywhere. All different sports.
Ultimately, the one shining Super Bowl.
Steve, you guys have 18 different Super Bowls. The one time we ever beat your ass was almost luck. It was just so random. Nick Foles, I said it before, he couldn't start anywhere like during his prime. So it was like we could never not take him out of that job. If we were gonna win, it was gonna be random. We weren't gonna pull him from that job. So like, I don't know. That was the one time that proved to me, like, if you have some random person who's doing great, don't change it. Just ride that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give you another example. The Boston Bruins in 2011, you know, they had both Tim Thomas and they had Tuukka Rask on the same roster.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Tim Thomas, who was a Vezina Trophy winner, but yet at the same time, you know, he had been known for basically just being almost a career. You know, everybody looked at him as essentially almost a career AHL player. Like, sure. he would never make it big in the NHL at all. And he was basically destined to be an AHL type player his entire career. He ends up standing on his head, winning or going to three game sevens that entire playoff run. Three game sevens. Not three game sevens. There were game sevens the entire playoff run. From the quarterfinals, the semifinals, the conference finals, and then the Stanley Cup Finals. Four game sevens. And, you know, it's like anything can happen in a single playoff run, essentially.
If you hired 100 people and said, predict it, 1,000 people from here to 1980 to 2050, no one predict, like, some of these stories. Like, that guy, no one saw that happening. It's sometimes destiny. I don't want to sound, but like it is. And then sometimes luck. I mean that's like the one story when I'm dead and gone. Like that was always my favorite thing was like watching Nick Foles. The next year, he was a backup. I think he got cut like four more times. He retired. He was never as good as Carson Wentz. But when he went in there, like something happened. Like he just kept winning. Never changed. Just win as long as you can. If you win at all, that's awesome. And no one can ever like explain how it happens. It's just like sometimes, you know, there's a combination of things. I think with goalies, it's even more relevant than in football. Like when goalies get hot in hockey, if someone's like making 35, 41 saves, I'm never pulling them out.
Right. You'll do that.
Ride that.
Yeah, it just ultimately, ooh.
What happened?
Ooh, wait a minute!
I'm watching the Mavericks burn my money. I'm distracted.
Yeah, that's what I'm reacting to right now. But there's a coach's challenge right now on this.
Mark,
here we go.
Mark Cuban somewhere with like he's like, Alex, I told you not to bet on us. I'm like, Mark, I didn't hear you. Oh, this guy, this ref's awful.
So, I mean, this could be determining whether or not the Thunder force Game 7 or if the Mavericks steal one here.
This is really fun. You guys will love it. My mom has, like, you know, 81 getting up there. In her sunroom and in her living room, there's a great TV, but it's on that Super Zoom, whatever it's called. It's, like, it's so zoomed in, you can't see, like, the screen, like the score. So I'm just watching
this
thing.
Oh, there was contact.
He did hit the ball first.
Oh, that's a contact. That's a three.
The thing is, does he hit the ball first?
Was it clean?
He hit the ball first.
Okay.
That should be a good challenge.
How much time's left? I can't read.
Wow. So 2.5 seconds left. So Dallas will shoot.
I was going to say hopefully we got plenty of time. My mom was like a Ray Charles, like Steve Wonder screen. I couldn't even read the scoreboard. Wow.
Yeah, wow. Dallas will shoot. They ruled that the call stands.
If you guys ever want to drive yourself mental, watch a game where you can't view the scoreboard. My mom's screen's like zoomed in on the players. It's so big I can't see the score.
Thunder do have a timeout though, so wait a minute, that's right. They got charged with the timeout.
Oh, Cuban's there. I thought Cuban sold his steak. Cuban's still there. He's like hanging out.
Yeah, he's still there.
Didn't he sell? Oh, he's like not majority owner.
There it is. That's the game. Dallas advances.
Not so fast.
We need a couple late free throws. I got a -2. Story of my life. It'll be -1. Found.
Okay.
Wow, that's a joke. Jesus.
Yep, Dallas advances. So it'll be Dallas awaiting the winner of Minnesota and Denver, which is also going to a game 7.
What do you guys think about that?
Unbelievable.
I don't want Denver, but Minnesota. So I'm sorry, bipolar. They're so erratic. I don't trust Minnesota in game 7 yet. Maybe next year. Steve, I told that to you before. I don't trust quite Oklahoma City yet. Give me a year. They're going to be a lot better next year. It takes time to get there.
Right.
To get there.
Well, you know, when you think about it, actually, this was actually a pretty good season for Oklahoma City when you consider the fact that they didn't make the playoffs last year. They have God knows how many draft picks in this year's draft.
I think only like 33 picks. They could pick
like
a new team in our
pick. They got a lottery pick as well.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
they're only going to get better.
That's a really fun team. And great fan base, too. Remember, they lost to, Durant, James Harden. Then they went through, the lulls. That was when they first got their team, too. And they slowly – Sam Presti was an awesome guy formerly from the Sixers. He got hired there, and they built up – it wasn't trust the process. It was literally, we'll deal those guys off. We're going to pick. They traded Paul George. People are like, how can you trade him? Who did they get? Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Right now, 7 days a week, Shea Gilgeous is a lot better than Paul George. They got Chet Holmgren. They have a lot of good young talent.
I still say he should win the Rookie of the Year.
Who's that, Shea?
Nah.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I still think the numbers supported Wembanyama.
Okay.
I love him
for Rookie of the Year.
It's like Ferrari, Lamborghini. I love them both. Like, you can't have both. Got to pick one. I mean, Jay's awesome. He's just getting started, Jeff. But Chet could have done a little bit more. But
a triple-double for Luka Doncic tonight. 29 points, 10 assists, 10 rebounds.
And I'm sorry. I keep hearing, he's sick, he's injured. Is this team making excuses? People are saying he's exhausted. I'm like, this guy's a machine.
Well, he is a cheat code. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. I've never seen a slower guy who, I'm totally out of shape. He looks a little bit out of shape. He'll take 20 seconds and take the weirdest looking shot, and it goes in. And like a year later, I'm still trying to figure it out. Every time I watch him, he just makes buckets. Like, he's not a quick athlete. He's not a, obviously he's a great athlete, but he's not like quick. You know what I mean?
Right.
He just.
I mean, there's other players. You've seen other players.
A bit more graceful.
You know, that are a lot quicker and a lot more efficient. By the way, it's now 5-1 Edmonton, so that game is pretty much wrapped up.
I'm so glad, yeah.
What happened in this game? It was 1-1, now it just blew up like a balloon.
I'm so glad I didn't take it, Edmonton.
Wow.
Goals by Holloway, Hyman, Bouchard, Nugent Hopkins, and now Evander Kane with his fourth goal of the playoffs.
Oh, well, Kane.
Evander
sure.
Kane. He's a blast in the past.
So
that guy had more drama than I was making like a silly bad joke, which is like one of my MOs. I was saying Kane, he's a blast in the past. I remember all the controversy he was in. It was like a TMZ, the guy Howie from TMZ was following him around. That's the type of guy though.
Oh yeah, right. Didn't he have some sort of issue? Wasn't it domestic violence or something?
It was gambling. No, and I'd rather, you know, ruin anyone that I ever knew. I would never be around anyone like that, so I wasn't making light of it. No, I think he was gambling, and then there was like 3 or 4 different controversies. And he was a big name like 3 or 4 years.
Gambling.
And then you know, he's cheating, like all that shit. I hate that stuff. But then he resurfaced on Edmonton. Sometimes, like, when teams are so good, like when they have 3 or 4 great players, you can't afford, like, to add a huge, like, cap. Sometimes if you find someone else like that, he's, like, coming off, like, some bad stuff, you could sign for cheap. I don't agree with it, but knock him out of the roster.
Yeah.
Kyrie.
So what do we got for the – obviously with the Mavericks now winning and advancing to the Western Conference Finals, who do you think they'll be facing? Timberwolves, Nuggets. I mean, Timberwolves had a 2-0 series lead. Then the Nuggets came back, made it 3-2, and Timberwolves forced a game 7 just the other night. So does experience pull it off, or does youth pull it off?
Experience.
Lou, go for it. Bye, Lou.
Lou, you said experience?
Yes.
So that would be the Denver Nuggets then against the Mavericks.
Yes.
What are your thoughts, Alex? Do you think the youth of the Timberwolves may finally punch that ticket, or is this does the Denver chance at a repeat still continue?
It's huge, guys. I always love, obviously, your takes and Lou's too. I was almost going to say, like, I'm leading Nuggets, but Lou, I always respect your takes. The thing with experience, look at the Wolves. I know they really haven't been there, but look at, like, Rudy Gobert from the their center. That's their anchor. He's like 35 years old. This guy's been waiting his whole life. So he's not like a – it ain't his first time in the rodeo. This guy's ready to kick Gobert's ass. He's been waiting for this, and he's not a young kid. So, like, that's where the experience is a little bit different. And then you have Mike Conley. That guy's been a good point guard. No one talked about him. No one really knew about him. We did, but, like, most fans are like, who's this guy? That guy's playing great defense.
Right.
Not a great score. Not a great score at all, dude. He might score 9 points and, like, play incredible and help them win. I have such a tough time betting against the Wolves. I love them. But I think overall, like, the Nuggets got scared to death. They were like, they got like their doors kicked in. The Wolves were ready to kick their ass. And slowly, all series, you've seen this. They were down 2-0. I think right now it's going to be a close game. I think Silver loves them. I think the defending champs are going to move on. I could easily. Who do you want? Or no, who do you think is going to advance? I could see the Wolves.
You know, I would kind of lean towards the Nuggets as well. It seemed like, except with the exception of Game 5, that this series had been mainly whoever is the home team ends up winning, with the exception being Game 5. So, you know, with that being said, I mean, you just gotta look at the series as a whole, and it's like, honestly, it's, I mean, there's been blowouts, but just for the most part, you know, Denver has done a lot much better at home as opposed to Minnesota.
Yeah. I think the first game I was like, I had no idea. I never imagined the Wolves would be able to show up like that. But, I mean, you guys thought, like, the first, like, 30 minutes, Anthony Edwards was easily the best player in the stadium. I was like, wow. He's going in there into Denver. He doesn't give a shit who the defending champs are. I love that. I thought that was so cool. Yeah. And I think he is, like, the next – it's dangerous. You never want to say, like, Kobe or Mike. Of course not. I'm not saying that. I think for the next great at least guard, like, the guy who's not, like, 7 feet tall, for the game, I think he might be the next one. Because he was, like, he was better than anyone in the stadium. Then I look at Denver, I'm like, they woke up. They had, like, kind of a wake-up call because they were cocky. Also, look at them guys. Jamal Murray, he's, like, 27, I think. Michael Porter, he's, like, 6'10 or 11. He's, like, 25. Denver's not old. Denver was waiting a long time to get that championship. I don't think Denver's ready to, you know, move out of the spot. They're not, like, an old, like, repeat, you know. They are a young team. If you look at them man for man, I think they were, I always thought Denver should have won it 2 or 3 years ago. So, like, I don't know how much time more Joker has. Obviously, when he goes, they're dead and buried. But I think they might have at least one more in them. I don't want to say that, but I don't think Denver's dead yet.
No, I don't think Denver's dead at all.
No.
Matter of fact,
I think when we look at them in like 20 years, I'm expecting them to have like 2 or 3 championships. Put it that. Do I think they're like a mega dynasty? No. But I always, for like 5 or 6 years, you know, coming up to this, remember, guys, they were always they made it to a couple like 3 or 4 Final Fours. They've been knocking on the doorstep for a little bit. So, like, I think they're going to at least get maybe one more. I don't know if it's this year, but.
Well, it should be interesting, regardless.
You guys,
you know, it should be interesting who could prevail, because in all honesty, I think it'll be a lot closer if it's Minnesota and Dallas as opposed to Denver and Dallas.
I think Denver will smack Dallas. Yeah, Minnesota could go into Dallas and win 2 in a row easily. Minnesota's younger, more athletic, and taller than the other two teams. I think Minnesota's the most dangerous team out of those three.
Really? I would think that Denver's the most dangerous.
I'm definitely not saying bet the best. I'm saying raw talent. Like, we saw Minnesota go in there into Denver, and what was it, like 31-8? It was crazy. I knew it wouldn't last, but that goes to show. Like, I think man for man. Look at Minnesota. They have awesome defense. They have 2 7-footers, and then they have Naz Reid, another 6'10 guy on the bench. Minnesota's comprised. They're built of different guys. They're not all young. All guys who have been around the league, like, they do have some good veterans. Dallas, I think, is Dallas as far as scoring-wise and, like, all-stars, like, you know, Hall of Fame credentials. Obviously, you have Kyrie and Luka. They could score 125 points. The next night, they could get blown out. Dallas is so erratic.
Right.
I mean, I've never – you know what I mean? I don't think either one of us three has ever trusted Kyrie. Luka's incredible. I don't know how he does it. So, like, yeah, they're dangerous, too. I'm giving respect to all of them. It's hard to predict. I think Denver's the most consistent one. Minnesota might win by 10 the next game. They're really good, man. Their role players have to step up. I think overall, like, their bench and their size and their depth and their athleticism, I think Minnesota's the best one. But, you know, what do I know? Do you guys think Denver's the best out of those three, or – that was kind of the wild card.
I mean, it's hard to bet against Denver especially when you have with how slowly they started out against Minnesota, and then they got their asses kicked in a wake up call by their head coach. And then next time, all of a sudden, you know, they come out and they fire off three straight wins. You know,
they rock them.
It makes it look like this. Just the fact that they're a lot deeper of a team, whereas when it comes to Minnesota, unless. If Naz Reid, not Naz Reid obviously being the sixth man of the year, it's like if he isn't putting up points, their bench is pretty much next to nothing.
You're right.
And give them
essentially.
Help us. And now Denver has Christian Braun, younger guy from Kansas. Now he's developed more. You know, what a difference a year makes. And then you have Bobby Jackson. We all know him, you know, even back from the Clippers. He's like a 10-year veteran. And, dude, you can never understate how important it is. Denver was just there. Denver knows how to win it. I was so amazed when Minnesota just stomped them in Denver. I'm like, this can't be happening. And like a fool in the rain, like I always am. I'm like, Minnesota's winning. Denver came right back and won by like 30. In Minnesota, they're not scared of Minnesota anymore. They can play anywhere in the country. They can beat Minnesota.
Right.
I'm talking myself back into reality. I mean, to me, Denver's the team to beat. I always thought they should have won two or three. I always loved their roster, at least for the past two or three years. I was waiting on them to win it. I mean, I thought Jamal Murray was so great from Canada. And then, dude, if you add a 6'10", 6'11 guy like Michael Porter, I know he doesn't play D. That guy, you guys have seen that 100 times. He'll catch a ball with like two or three guys next to him.
Yep.
And just nail a three. So he's like instant offense. Will we ever see a guy like Joker again? They're a unique, like, creative team from all over the world. I always love Denver when, like, two or three.
I mean, I'll even put it like this. As a Boston fan, there's one team I do not want to face in a potential Stanley Cup final. Or not Stanley Cup, in a potential NBA final. There's only one team remaining I don't want to face.
And that is Denver.
Never going to be easy. You got to face your fears. They are the biggest. They're the baddest heavyweight. Boston's they need KP back. I mean, let's not be foolish. Big Al, I love him, dude. I mean, he's not stopping the Joker. That's the key right there.
Yeah.
Man for man, Boston's better. Much better bench.
They definitely
have a better bench.
Denver doesn't want to face Boston. I'll tell you that much.
I would say the one weakness that Boston has, honestly, is their big men. Because apart from Porzingis, Horford is getting older. You know, for some reason, his shot, with the exception of last game against his shot has seemingly disappeared. You know, it's weird. It's like,
I agree with you.
It's like you're just wondering what happened to the Al Horford who used to be dominant on the Atlanta Hawks.
We've
always seen that from hockey to baseball to basketball. I mean, Father Time is undefeated, right? We can't.
Right.
I mean, every person, me, you, and Lou, everyone in the world is going to change a little bit. He's adjusted his game. He was never a 25. He's never an all-star scorer. What he is, a great rebounder, defender, leader. So he was great, you know, suddenly coming off the bench. That's where they took the next step. They've always been an awesome team. I've always loved the Celtics. And then their roster, the way they built this team. So now it's like he adjusted in that perfect role off the bench. They don't need him. They're not passing it to him. They're not like, Al, please score this hoop. Whatever he scores is like a, you know, dessert. It's like a, you know, on top. They don't expect him to score. Without KP, they need him to score. A little bit, at least.
Right.
Because, I mean, their team's not game plan. They're not doubling. So, like, they're doubling Jaylen Brown and, of course, Tatum. When that ball moves to Al and he's like 10 feet away, he has to hit that bunny. He has to hit that shot. I don't know if he has that anymore. It's not like you have to hide him.
You mean to tell me that apart from Kristaps Porzingis, that you're going to put your faith in Al Horford and Luke Kornet? Granted, Kornet was known as the murder Kornet for so many years, but it's like...
I love that. Where's that from? I never heard that. That's awesome.
I think he wasn't a former Knick?
Yeah, when the Knicks were bad too. I'm not dissing Kornet, but he lasted for like a month when the Knicks were like not playoffs. So I was like, wow, Boston does a good job like reclaiming like developing people again. He was on Knicks for like a month.
Right. What I'm saying is this is basically like, you don't want your hopes resting in somebody like Luke Kornet to play big minutes while one of your big men is out with an injury.
If you're in Denver, like early second quarter, you'd rather be putting a guy like Al Horford, and then with the guys I love, like you know, and they're great, like Pritchard, Hauser, the guy, like you have a great bench. You don't want to be like, you don't want to already have Al Horford in. Al Horford, let's be honest, he should be coming off the bench, because if you're playing him, then it kind of throws the whole thing off. So it's like,
right?
Because Denver, you need bodies. You're going to get Aaron Gordon and Joker. If Al Horford was 24, he'd be even better, but like that's where you could use him there. Al's good with like 15, 20 minutes, let's be honest. I'm good for no minute, but like he's older. Like he's good for like 15, 20 minutes. If you're throwing him at Joker, Boston could still beat him, but like they need KP back. Porzingis is the game.
I mean,
this is a guy who had
wide open shots. And when I say wide open, I mean literally wide open. Like there was nobody around him. There's no reason why he should miss a wide open 3-point attempt. All you would hear would be clang as it goes right off of the rim.
Yeah, and he was never like he was never like Barkley or like Wilt Chamberlain. He was never like a dominant low post guy. He was always a great defender, really good rebounder from Dominican Republic. Like you said, Atlanta Hawks. He was never going to be like a 30-point scorer. He was never a huge dunker.
No,
but he had that little 10-foot. Obviously, closer is better. 8-foot, like he was money from there. If he's not hitting that, it's like, dude, Al, come on, man. Like we still got you on the team. You got to be able to hit that. You never want him to be a liability because if you don't, he's going to be your number one big. I'm not saying they can't win with him starting, but if KP comes back, I would still say a heavy favorite. Without KP, it's like I would say 50-50. I still think Boston's better overall, but like they got to play against the Joker. Size is going to win. I don't think it has to, but like it's huge. They need Porzingis.
Yeah, most definitely. They need Porzingis to be as healthy as possible. And from what it sounds like he is going to miss the start of the conference finals, whether it's against the heavily banged up Knicks or against the young Indiana Pacers. Porzingis is expected to return at some point during the conference finals, but he will not be there for the start of the conference finals.
I would leave him out until they obviously you don't want to go down game one, but if you win game one, I'd almost like bonus it, like give him plus one. So if they go down, if they tie game two, then I'd be like, all right, bring him back. I would not rush him back. Dude, he's a talented player, Steve. Dean Lewis Sanders, he's always had injuries. It is what it is. It sucks. I would not rush him back because then he'll fall apart. If they do advance then and they brought him back, you can't keep bringing a guy off and off you know, out of his stretcher when he's 7'3". So you got to wait till he's nice, till he's good. Obviously, if you go down O2, he's suiting up tomorrow. I don't care if you can't walk, you're suiting up. I'm paying you $40 million, you're in the lineup. But, like, fine line, they can't rush him back. I think they can win without him. Once they get in the final territory, he should be suiting up either way. That's dude, he could be a Hall of Famer. That's always been his problem, his injuries. That was one of the most talented players the last 10 years, dude. When he got drafted, no one really knew about him. 7'3", shooting threes, passing like that. He's an absolutely incredible talent.
But his big problem is injuries, of course.
Yeah, I hate to say it. That was the one thing. The Knicks fans absolutely worshipped him. And then he kept getting injured, and then he skipped the end of the season interview with the Knicks. Man, I know Phil Jackson was a total piece of shit, but like, they're like, we don't know where he is. His brother said he wants to leave. I'm like, his brothers went in there. They're like the Joker's brothers. They like demanded a new raise. I'm like, they're like, he hasn't been going to like work out with our trainers, dude. Like a month later, they traded him. That was the end of Porzingis in New York. Weird endings. That was like his third year.
Yeah.
He was just getting started.
By the way, it sounds like OG Anunoby is officially out for Game 7, which means that the heavily banged-up Knicks are going to be even more banged up, especially when up against the wall. Who do we got advancing to the conference finals here with the Knicks and the Pacers?
Lou, I'm getting nauseous talking about the injuries. Lou, who do you have? You start off.
All right, so the Knicks, though. Got to give it a win at home.
It's getting crazy, dude. They've lost like 5, 6, 7 key players. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Lou, are you done with that? Because I'm ready to jump in, man. I don't care. Dude, that's called energy, like one of those destiny years. Yeah, I'm taking the Knicks. In the Garden, Steve, it's going to be supercharged. Brunson's going to score about 45 points.
Yeah.
Somehow, the Knicks, I mean, dude, they're playing like five guys that are like 6'3". Well, dude, Josh Hart, though, he's out, though. Thibodeau played him like 8 games straight without resting. They're trying to kill the guy. He's injured.
Oh, is Hart out, too?
I think they're starting like a couple cheerleaders. Hart got pulled last game. They had him on a stretcher. He set a basketball record. Played 4 straight games without getting subbed out.
I didn't know that Hart is also out.
Thibodeau's like a cold leader. It's like end of the world. He's like, he refused to rest anyone. It's like, yeah, Hart hasn't rested since like 2 weeks ago. He was like, I'm fine. Like, they pulled him out. You got to look it up, bro. He set an NBA, he set a basketball record. He played like 3.5 games without getting subbed out. Like Iron Man for 3 games in the playoffs, dude. And he's playing down
low.
It's the playoffs. And he's
6'4", 6'5". You got to keep your best guys out there.
No, I love it. I love the idea. But, dude, he's also playing for at Randall's position, dude. That guy's all hard.
Oh, true, yeah.
I mean, he's banging. He was never a great offensive player, dude. That guy has made such a great name for himself. I think he's been the best Knick. I know Brunson's awesome, but I don't know what they're capable of, man. That's been the coolest basketball story I've seen in a couple of years. They've lost so many guys. No one expects the Knicks to do anything.
I'll tell you something. That'll be, how ironic would it be if Porzingis, say the Nets end up, or Nets, the Knicks end up winning against the Pacers. They come into Boston. And Porzingis becomes the sole reason why they lose.
That would be fitting, but it would be, you know, we can always expect it. We've seen such terrible random things. It would be awesome, though. The good All-American version would be a healthy Porzingis, and then the Knicks in Game 7, like Knicks-Celtics. The league's so much better. The Celtics have been good for a while. The league's better when the Knicks are good there. I mean, the league, you know, he's staying up late at night going, oh, man, I want Knicks Celtics. There's no way the Pacers are winning tomorrow. Think about Adam Silver. He would fly to New York and fire them. Now, they
I
might,
wish I
they
could
might,
see
but...
who the referee is.
Look
right.
him up, dude. He's probably on a speed
well,
dial.
Well, the referee assignments aren't announced until the day of, so.
They flew him out tonight with, like, five bodyguards from Vegas. There's no way that guy, yeah. Silver's like, you're taking the Knicks. He's like, sir, who's this? Like, Adam Silver. Unmarked call. Yeah, dude. It's the sport that keeps on giving. You know the refs are going Knicks tomorrow. The Knicks will have three guys that are limping around and, like, cheerleaders.
Right.
Steve, do you
actually, let me see.
I like the Pacers.
Let me
like,
see who was the assignment today.
Think about this.
Oh, no
been
wonder
rough.
Why Oklahoma City got screwed.
Why?
The fixer.
The referee was Tony Brothers, most infamously known for black on black crime.
Oh.
And the reason why I say that is because most of the fights he gets involved in are fights against black stars.
So ridiculous.
So no wonder why the Oklahoma City Thunder got screwed over on that challenge.
I really think it takes a ton of money and it's crooked as hell. Look at the betting, the refs, everyone's in on it. The NBA can make a good dollar, like having a reality show about refs. You got to start with Tim Donaghy from back in the day. He's in Max Penn somewhere. If you don't think the Mafia and now with everyone betting, if you don't think the NBA is crooked, I would never. I mean, Steve, let's be honest. I don't know if they're the better team. Can you see the Knicks losing tomorrow in Madison Square Garden? The NBA wants the Knicks to advance.
Honestly, I could. If I'm being honest, it really depends. It really depends on if the Pacers' shot is falling or not.
Yeah.
If the Pacers are putting up points, like if Halliburton is just absolutely going off, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a Pacers win. Because usually when Halliburton goes off. It's kind of like Jalen Brunson with the New York Knicks. If Halliburton goes off, then it's looking bright. We'll put it that way.
No ref can stop it. They can be like, sir, stop, like tie your laces. Halliburton's like 8 for 9 from three. The refs, whatever they call it, they can't stop it. I think though, the refs, all joking aside, quietly, I've seen this too many times before, man. Before I was younger, now I'm an old man. Like, I've seen this script. The Knicks, they haven't been here in a while. The NBA, the refing is more biased than any sport. I love the NBA. It is what it is. Silver wants, I mean, Celtics-Knicks series is huge. Pacers, yeah, cool. We respect the Pacers. I think they're probably better. They're more talented than the Knicks. I want the Knicks, but, like, I mean, yeah, no, you're right, though. Like, if the Pacers come out and score 41 points the first quarter and blow the Knicks out, That's their best way to win. Don't give the refs a chance.
You know, there is also a storyline, though. There is also a storyline to be had, too, because for those who don't remember, the Pacers eliminated the Celtics from the NBA Cup.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
it could be
– I don't think that's planned.
It could be a case of, like, congratulations, you eliminated us during a meaningless tournament. Now we're going to eliminate you guys when it matters.
Sure. I mean, I think that it's kind of cool, though, because I think you guys do, too. I hate when the refs can tarnish or influence the game. The Pacers are the type of team, they can go out there tomorrow, they can score 43, 48 points in the first quarter. The Knicks could be down 30 within the first half hour. The Pacers are the most explosive scoring team. You think Carlisle's going to sit back and let the refs? No, they're going to. Dude, the Pacers are going to go 100 miles an hour. Every play, they're going to be going to this bucket. Watch. Carlisle challenged them. He said, you guys are wusses. You don't deserve to be here. The Pacers, I think, are more talented. The Knicks are at home. That's a great matchup.
I mean, I've seen it happen before. I wouldn't be surprised at all if you know, if either team falls flat on their face. I mean, you gotta think for a second. You know, this is a game seven. So, you know, that's where all the pressure comes up.
Like, deep down. You guys have heard me, man. I have plenty of faults. Like, I miss calls, plenty of stuff. More than I'm right, I'm wrong. But, like, I've always said, hey, I always respect the Pacers. You know, Magic or team, I was like, Pacers have a lot of good players. And I love seeing them, like, an underdog team. Like, the Pacers might not get there back there for 10 years. They have, I mean, and the Knicks are so beat up. Lou, do you think the Knicks are going to win tomorrow or not?
I do.
How? Brunson?
Brunson.
Defense? You know the Pacers are coming hard. The Pacers are going to score points.
Yeah.
Tough game, dude.
It'll prove to be a very gritty bunch of players. If the Knicks, with all these injuries, can somehow advance to the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, despite all the injuries that they're going through.
Yeah. I don't think any fan base, especially, and obviously no team wants to be like, oh, injuries. No, they're just trying to win. They'll suit up anyone. Like, they're proud, they're confident, but, like, I don't think, and I was never, like, a hardcore Knicks fan growing up, but, like, I've never seen this. They're missing, like, three starters, and now it's, like, their whole bench is out. Now, and then basketball size is important, right? They're starting, like, all 6'3", 6'4", guys. So Josh Hart, you have a guy on the Knicks. He's feeling, like, lacerated lung. He hasn't gotten a rest for a week. He hasn't gotten a minute on the bench. Like, they're giving, like, IVs, and he's out-rebounding, like, seven-footers. Steve, I'm sorry to sound corny, but, like, it's one of the best stories we've seen in basketball. For them to be alive this long, I don't think the league would want him to get this far and let him die now. I think they're going to get, like, the red carpet treatment. I think that the refs are going to kind of usher them in.
Well, I think, like I said,
they'll get murdered by that.
We won't know who the officials are. We won't know who the officials are until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. But I think it'll be very telling. Depending on who the official is, I think it'll be very telling.
They're finding like the Guns N' Roses. Yeah, like the select officials from like, oh, yeah. We'll see him. Watch. Silver's got his boys coming in there. 10 seconds in, they're going to call a foul on the Pacers, and Carlisle's going to throw a shit fit.
Yeah, I think it'll be very telling if it's somebody like a Scott Foster or a Zach Zarba.
Oh God!
You know that's a clear indicator of what the NBA wants to have happen, depending on who they put out there.
Of course, you guys saw what Pulp Fiction, right? Where he drives in after like the murder. Oh, the cooler, the cleaner. He just shows up like middle of the night. No one knows his name. He just makes sure everything turns out right and disappears. Yes, the NBA literally has coolers. They have refs that fly in and just like kind of help determine how the game goes. No other sport I've ever seen. Good luck, Pacers. Watch this, guys.
Yeah.
Imagine being a Blazer fan. When you didn't know that the league fixed games like this, I didn't know anything about it. My dad, when I was like 8 years old, he got tickets into Madison Square Garden. He was working in Manhattan.
Yeah,
he'd been in Manhattan for like a year. He goes, I got these tickets. I never saw basketball. I went courtside, met Clyde Drexler, Cliff Robinson, Danny Ainge, old school Blazers, Steve. That's how I got hooked. So random. There's no way I should ever be a Blazer fan. I met Blazers when I was, like, 8. And, dude, but like, growing up, I'd see them Lakers. They were up, like, 25 in the fourth. Bulls. Kobe. Jordan Kobe. I've seen, like, 3 or 4 game sevens where they're up, like, 17 or 18. This is long before, you know, now they're, like, lottery. They're, like, the worst. Dude, watch the Pacers fans. They're going to be up, like, 17 tomorrow in the fourth. Knicks by 3. I've seen this movie.
Yes.
No other sport predicates wins like the refs in the NBA. They let them do it. They got silver screen light.
It's like I said, it'll be very telling depending on who you see, depending on who the ref is. If it's Tony Brothers, well, you better hope you don't have a black star as your star, because otherwise you're getting fucked. Put it that way.
What's the deal? He goes against like a Halbern? Like what would he? How would he impact against?
He goes against every single person that like if there's a very important key play, he'll side with the white star before he'll side with the black star.
Sounds like a Clarence Thomas almost.
I know it sounds very racist. I know it sounds very racist of me to put it that way, but it's true. It's happened multiple times with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. When there's been a legitimate, if they were involved in some sort of legitimate call, Tony Brothers always ruled against them.
When you're calling it, when you're analyzing different refs, they could be purple or brown or white or green, whatever. You're just stating the facts. He has a history. It's your job to report the facts. You're not saying anything negative or derogatory. And then who are the other refs that can come in? I remember the old refs.
There could be Scott Foster. You could see Zach Zarba. Zach Zarba is one of the worst ones also, because he's one that the ref that the NBA brings in when they want a definitive, like when they know specifically who they want to advance, they'll bring him in to make sure that it happens.
That was going to be something I was going to say. Like, so look at this. Knicks with all injuries, dude, there's no way. If the Knicks and the Pacers played the next month straight, obviously not every day, like full force, but like right now, the Pacers health-wise and talent-wise, the Pacers are better. The Pacers have some really great young players. They also have Siakam, Miles Turner. The Knicks are decimated by injuries. The Knicks need help. Yep. So if this guy flies in, let's be honest with you. Obviously, we want the Knicks to win, but like, dude, the Pacers are a small market from Indiana. Much more money, much more ratings. From here to China, dude, the NBA is global. Does the NFL want, you know, the Cardinals in the Super Bowl or the Cowboys or the Eagles? You know, look at the markets. Money, much more money. Maybe.
Right.
If they don't want the Pacers to advance. Let's be honest. I don't want to say it to a 9-year-old. I don't want to say it to a 12-year-old in Indiana. The NBA, the money, the CEOs, they want the Knicks to advance.
Yeah, let's kind of equate this here to the Boston Bruins against the Florida Panthers. You have an original six team like Boston, who they already have diehard fans to begin with. So there's no worry at all that if Boston doesn't advance that Boston's going to lose fans. There's no worry of that ever happening. But ultimately, if you're a business, if you're a league like the NHL, they want to make sure that they're bringing in that all of their teams are attracting as many fans as possible. So naturally, they went with calls to go Florida's way. Because Florida, you know, they're making it. They made it to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. They're a small market team compared to like the Tampa Bay Lightning, for example. They're a small market team.
Yep.
And an original six team like Boston would be able to withstand losing and not advancing to the conference finals, as opposed to a team like Florida, who is trying to build up, a diehard fan base.
You're right. That the Boston popularity and the Boston money will never go away. The Bruins in a month, they're still gonna sell jerseys. Now they can spark a new market, and they can still now they can build a new market, a lot of new money, a lot of new fans in Florida.
Yeah, so it's kind of similar here with Indiana. That's why I'm kind of fearing for Knicks fans here. It's kind of the same thing with Indiana. You know,
I think it's a little
Indiana.
I love your point in hockey. I think it's a little different. Just, I didn't mean to cut you off, right? You know I love you, but I'm going to say this. NBA, it's more global. I think they're already making so much money. I think they want, because the Knicks have not been in that, these deep, holy shit, do or die. Like, everyone's watching. Like, my mom's 81. Not going to be around longer. She's like, Alex, are you going to stay out here? Like, are we watching the Knicks? I'm like, yeah. That's going to be, like, one of the joys of our life. She's never said that. Like, the Knicks being relevant is a really cool thing. So that's why they're coming through. Of course, but, like, overall in sports, commissioners do love when, like, a small market team makes it through. So normally Indiana would have a shot. But, like, the Knicks, the Bulls, they haven't been relevant in years. The Lakers have been relevant because of LeBron. Have they been a great team? Not really. Like, the NBA feeds, they make money, like, millions of dollars if the Knicks advance, because they haven't been relevant in years. But I love what you said about, like, in hockey, the Bruins are still going to make money. I think it's more different. In hockey, it's more like the great teams. It's such a popular sport. I think you have more old-school traditional fans. Even the young kids, you know, the sons, the grandmothers, the grandkids, it's more embedded. I think basketball is more global, and there's a lot more fans that are like 14 or 15 or 16. I think the NBA really wants them in China, Russia, everywhere. Wow, the Knicks are here. Because I think that's a big missing piece in the NBA. When the Knicks are good, the NBA is making a ton of money.
Yeah.
That's where I'm saying. Like, it's a little bit different than hockey.
Right. I mean, you do have a point there that it could be where, you know, with them trying to reach over to a global audience, which, I mean, let's be fair, you know, hockey, they're not really trying to reach out globally, because hockey, you know, it's technically they are already global. You know, you have players playing overseas in Russia, playing in Finland, Sweden, and other areas like that. Canada, obviously.
I prefer the hockey. Trust me. NBA is, like, all about, like, commercials.
Yeah.
You know, LeBron, Kobe, it is good or bad, but I think it's different. They really live and die by, like, different. You know, Brunson, this guy, no one even, you know, Mark Cuban didn't re-sign him. Luka was cool with him. Like, he was a role player. He was a second-round pick out of, Villanova. He was never, like, a huge thing in college. The Knicks signed him. Like, he's going to be our guy. Everyone's like, what? You max contract this guy? Now he's like a top five player. I think, you know, NBA is more built on like 7 or 8 or 9, you know, stars. If Brunson gets the finals, that'd be a cash cow. You know, people in China are watching the Knicks. Just for the last 10 or 15 years, no one's been watching the Knicks, only the hardcore Knicks fans.
Right. But I still think, though, at the same time, you can't really rule out, because the Pacers run to the NBA Cup Finals had such high ratings.
It did.
Yeah.
That
I'm not discounting.
I don't think you can rule out the potential for the league to potentially look at that and say, you know what, I think we would rather want to try and build up interest in the Pacers more, especially when you consider the fact that, you know, the Knicks have been more relevant compared to them in recent years.
Overall, yep. Yeah. I mean, the last time the Pacers were relevant, it was Reggie Miller playing against the Knicks with Spike Lee and, you know, Larry Johnson, Patrick Ewing. That was fun.
Right.
So, like, the league's getting above. No, you're right. They might throw a curveball. Maybe Adam Silver's quietly saying, yeah, I'll send in my, my Sopranos Pulp Fiction crew tomorrow. Maybe they're going to help the Pacers. Maybe the Pacers don't need help. Maybe I'm just, you know, being a conspiracy bullshit theorist. Because it would be fun if, you know, it's always fun when the small market teams get in there. That's what I've always rooted for. I've seen it so often.
Yeah.
especially in the NBA. See, teams are, like, awesome. I always say, you know, the bigger market or the teams that have won it, they always somehow in the fourth, they get calls, they're up 14. We always see it coming. They miss a couple shots and then the free throws and, they lost again. It's so hard to beat the
Also, let's not forget. Also, let's not forget as well, this is a game seven. And
yes.
What do the refs love the most? The refs love the spotlight.
Oh, God.
They love getting the chance, much like what's his name, that NFL referee that loves to flex his muscles, every game. Ed Hockley. To do that all the time. I can tell you with almost certainty that NBA referees absolutely love when they have to call a game seven, because that means that they know that they have to, that they have the opportunity to really fuck shit up.
Oh,
and
course.
Be
they
in the spotlight.
They can crush anyone's dreams in a second. And then let's not forget the most important one. Love it or hate it, it is what it is. You can't, like, Garden on a Sunday, obviously Saturday night would be better, but like a Sunday afternoon, game seven, the Knicks haven't been there for a while, Pacers haven't been there really ever. There's going to be Iggy Azalea, all these lovers that I can't give a shit about, but like maybe some cool ones, but like the atmosphere is going to be electric. I hope the refs are not going to start determining it. Does the NBA want to tarnish their product? Now you're going to have the celebrities, not to say matter much, but everyone's watching it now. It's going to be like, not Super Bowl, but like there's going to probably be a couple more million people watching this game. Whether that's good or not, it is what it is. Do you think the NBA is going to tarnish it by like having it be decided by refs? I'm trying to hope for the best and say hopefully they let the guys play. Because if I'm in Indiana, if I lose on a bullshit call, I'm going to lose faith. It's hard enough playing in a small city. You think these guys want to play in Indiana? They want to be in New York partying with girls, hanging out. Halliburton wants to.
Well, if I remember correctly, which team was it that filed a protest this postseason? Was it Indiana that played under protest?
I love
over the result of one of the games.
I don't know if it was Carlisle. I'm not sure. I can look it up real quick. I'll look it up.
I want to say it was the Pacers.
I also love Carlisle. He's been close for like two decades. He lit into his team last. He got sauce. The Knicks blew him out. Pacers came back last game and just rocked the Knicks. He's a great coach. Dude, they're going to be ready to play tomorrow.
Well, they better be, because. It's almost like if you smell blood in the water and you know that this team is injured, that this next team is injured. You know, it's almost like you want to take advantage of that as quickly as possible.
Oh yeah. Oh, I can go into the Garden. Like these guys, yeah, they might be from all over the country, or CSM Africa. But these guys are like playing in Indiana. It's not terrible. If you give me $30 million, I'm not going to complain. But, like, some of them, they like New York. They like the girls. They like the commercials and stuff. There's a lot of opportunities. They want to go and play well because they know celebrities are there. Like you said, if the Knicks are kind of hobbling around injured, dude, the Pacers are dreaming right now of going in there and rocking the Knicks because they know the Knicks are a little injured. They're not going to get them next year like this. But no one cares. Win or lose. If they win, who gives a shit in 10 years? No, we won. They didn't. But, this is their chance. They also have veterans, dude. Siakam's been not withering away, but he's been waiting for his time in Toronto. Steve, you've always talked about Miles Turner. He's kind of underrated. Really good center. And T.J. McConnell from Syracuse, he loves going back in the Garden. He used to play Big East tournaments in MSG. And then you have Halliburton.
Right.
Indy is a really nice game, and they do have some ties to that New York area. It's interesting, man. This is going to be really interesting. I cannot pick who's going to win this. It's on sheer, energy, but, I really think right now, because the injuries, too, Indiana's a lot bigger, and they're faster. Brunson's going to have to score 45, 50 points. Lou, do you think if Indiana plays well, can Indiana win this? Can you see that?
They could certainly win. Probably they don't. But, yeah, they do stand a chance to win if they play well enough.
It's like, we don't want to see it, but it could happen.
Yes.
I mean, because, Steve, think about it, man. Knicks are, like, hobbled. They're just trying to move on with, like, defense and, like, slow it down. There's no faster team in the league than the Pacers. Pacers are going to come out trying to score right away. The Knicks are, like, exhausted.
You know, and, I really believe it's all going to come down to, and, you know, this is nothing against the Knicks at all, but I really think it's going to come down to Indiana's shot is falling or not.
Yeah.
I think that's ultimately what it's going to come down to.
They really do live by the three. And they don't have Chris Mullin or, Tatum or Brown or Pritchard. But Halliburton's got the other shot. Like, they shouldn't be a big three team. Their coach preaches, like, quick offense. Get the ball up the court, shoot within 5, 7 seconds. Like, fast break. They're not, like, a bunch of great three-point shooters. I think they're best maybe Nisa. So I've always liked. You know what I mean? But they're not, like, dead-eye shooters. They don't have, like, snipers.
Right.
They're at their best when they get the ball. The Knicks are, like, looking up, like, oh, we missed a shot. They should be at half court pushing the ball. McConnell's a great passer. Holliburton's a great passer. Pass the ball, just run up. They have fast bigs. They're faster more than the Knicks. Push the pace. But, yeah, no, they fall in love with the three-point shot. I hate when any team does that. But, I mean, that's the NBA now.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. That's what the game is now, where it's you live or die. Success relies on whether or not you land the three.
I mean, do you agree with that or not? If I'm the Celtics, I'm not – yeah, of course, if they're like 8-for-14 in the first quarter, you keep letting them shoot. But, like, I'm not building a game plan or a strategy around, like, just shooting threes. If we have better players, get to the rim. Get to the rim. I mean, threes are just unpredictable. I don't know. I hate that. Live by the three.
And die by the three.
That's what it's become.
That's why I'm so impressed, Steve, now with the Celtics. They stopped doing that. They were never like, I'm not saying they were like bad about that. But when the Celtics have been close the past couple of years, we've all seen Tatum in the fourth or Jalen. You know, if you're 3-for-9 from three, don't go down the court, like, tie a game in 5 minutes left and just jack up a three. That's just not good basketball. Go down low, working around a little bit. Like, if you're such a good team,
you do still see somebody like Tatum attempt that, though.
I love it.
I
don't want to see them, like, live and die by it. I love that they can do that. Don't make it like the main thing. If it's like a doer, like a huge, like, clutch moment, you could speak, like, you'd rather see Tatum, like, pump that, have them respect that, and then they jump up, and then he can dribble around and, like, score a dunk or a layup. You know what I mean? You want that in your bag, but you don't want to, like, you don't want to show, like, that's what you're going to do. They became unpredictable.
And that's why most games when it came down to the final shot, every single team knew that Boston would always give it to Tatum, and that Tatum would do the exact same fucking play every single time.
Which is basically
dribble out the clock and then do a fade attempt.
Yeah, and it's like, and of course, Tatum's not like a wuss. He's not like a pansy. He's going to do it, but, like, I don't think Tatum enjoyed that. I think Tatum's having a lot of fun now. It can't be fun when you're, like, missing that shot and you're trying your ass off and no one else. Because, like, the coach wasn't really, like, I think when everything's distributed, when everyone's shooting, dude, I don't want to be the only one feeling the pressure. If I'm in a battle with, like, everyone else, everyone's working hard. Like, now that everyone's scoring, it's a team game. Living down by
no,
three.
You know what? I think he's been recently kind of pissed off at the narrative that's been thrown out there that's saying that he isn't a playoff performer.
Yeah.
if anybody's noticed, he's really picked up his gameplay the last couple of games. You know, I think he's playing with a bit of a chip on his shoulder that, you know, people believe that he's more of a regular season performer as far as compared to a playoff performer.
Sure, I think that's growing up, and I think it wasn't that he's me personally. I never thought he was like a choke artist. I've said that about some people, but like, I think there was too much pressure for no reason. He was expected every time to shoot it. Like, dude, he's a great player. You had Jaylen Brown. Now Jaylen Brown's shooting 24 times a game. Dude, you know it better than me. When they're playing great, dude, Pritchard might score 21 points. Jaylen might have 15 shots, and Tatum might have 12 shots. That's the best way they're going to win it, balanced. It's not saying
right.
it's not
a lot
like
of
a,
it does have
top.
To do a lot, of it,
a
lot of it does have to do with the ball movement.
Yeah, yeah, it's like it's not saying he's kind of like, oh, F everyone who doesn't believe in me. Like, I don't think it's like that. I think it's just you don't need to prove yourself anymore. We're not saying you were trick artists, but I think it was unfair to him when, oh, we're panicking, we're going to hand it to him. Dude, he's the same age as Jaylen Brown. Like, why are you entrusting Jaylen Brown? Is like, or Tatum was like 24, 22 years old to carry the load. A team doesn't do that. Now they have bounce. So I don't think it was an indictment. It wasn't a criticism on Tatum. Dude, they can win it all without him, but I really think they could damn you. They could damn well use Porzingis back. This is their year.
Yeah, well, you know, I think, though, there were certain moments, though, when I was watching the last series against Cleveland, there were certain moments where Tatum looked uncharacteristically more aggressive on certain plays, to where he'd be like, it was almost like he was playing with something to prove, to the point of where once he made it happen, he would then get in somebody's face. He would get in people's faces.
Yeah. Think about it, like Steve. He's such an awesome player, and he's a great guy too. I always root for Tatum, dude. But like, think about it. If you're always the man, and then like, now Jason, you know, welcome back, dude. Obviously, he's royalty in Boston. He's got a kid sitting in court that I love it. But like now, like instead of always being thrusted in that pressure spot every time, now they're like, oh, we brought in other guys. You know, we want other guys to score. He's kind of thinking, yeah, you know what? When I came here, I didn't know anyone here. They gave me the contract. I was the cat. Like, I'm the man. You know what? I can still do that. So now he's picking his game back up, but he doesn't have to force it like he used to. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
Wow, I have help.
Right.
It's like if McDavid has like three or four more goal scores, he's going to show you, dude, you know what? I still want the puck. And they're like, dude, we weren't trying to mess with you. We just want to show you we brought more talent in. It's a win-win. He shouldn't have to feel that burden, that pressure every time.
Well, I still think though that it was kind of that. I still think though that he's playing, like I said, with a chip on his shoulder, like where he's basically saying, "Fuck you" to all the haters, you know, like to those who believe that he isn't a playoff performer, that he can't hack it, you know. Because seemed very uncharacteristically aggressive. I mean, he's been aggressive, but, like, I'm talking, like, very aggressive to where, you know, he's after he dunks on somebody, he then stares them down. Or
we didn't see
after
that.
He launches a three-pointer over somebody. It's like he's doing it with malice, if that makes any sense.
Makes perfect sense. And look at, I know I'm like, back in the day, I used to want like people who are just like rampage and foul and score a goal. But now, like the older I get, like the one thing I've learned, like a lot of it's mental, right? Like, dude, Brad Stevens, the coach, they were so close to you. He moved upstairs. You know he knows what he's doing, dude. Joe Mazzulla, great coach.
Oh, yeah.
I think a lot of it with them is mental. So they were almost like, hey, we got more talent. Like, they didn't say it to him, but they're like, he's looking around. He's like, oh, wow, they're bringing more talent to score. Like, they don't think I can be the man? I noticed that, too. Like, now when he scores, he's like, dude, I'm still the man. It makes him so much more dangerous because he's not going to force it. He can pass it to other guys, but he knows if he has to with, like, 3 minutes left, he'll take the shot. Their biggest downfall, I thought, was, like, you know, when he would try to be like he was going against the whole team. We've seen him go against, like, two or three guys. Now they're so dangerous, dude. They're multi-dimensional. They've done a good
right.
I mean, Brad Stevens, I was like, oh, dude, I thought Brad Stevens was going to win as coach for you guys. I was like, why is he moving upstairs? What do you want to win, like, with it? You know, celebrating with the team. Dude, he's a much smarter guy than me. He's like, he still made a great salary. He's like, you know what? I'm going to control who comes into our team. He's still just as important as the coach. It was brilliant, dude.
Oh, he did win. He did win Executive of the Year this year.
And now he doesn't have to work, you know, 120 hours a week.
Yeah.
Getting complained at by, you know, players' agents. Now he's, like, looking
right.
down from the box. Dude, that's brilliant. I mean, he's still just as important as anyone in Boston. Yeah, he won the Executive. I mean,
he won Executive of the Year. I mean, look at what he's done ever since taking over. Look at how he transformed that roster. How he took
incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, he took Aaron Nesmith. He took Romeo Langford. Like a couple of these scrub players. And I mean, I say that now, but then you look at what Aaron Nesmith has done for Indiana recently.
But you got to give to get. It's not a bad move.
But it's like you take a look at these scrub players that they had, and it's all of a sudden he's flipped them into players like Derek White, like Kristaps Porzingis, like Drew Holiday. I mean, it's like, how can you flip them, or how can you flip those type of deals and not win Executive of the Year? I mean, he should have won it last year.
I think you've been the smart. I agree with you 100%, Steve. I haven't thought about it enough. Like, think about this. I never thought, like, I was like, why would he go upstairs? He was so close to winning. He was a young guy from Butler. He's so smart, dude. He knew the way to go the next step. Because, like we know, like, you know, when he's coaching guys, like, yeah, it's awesome. But, like, now he moved upstairs. Now he can determine draft picks, free agency. It's like, now he can control, like, not from home, but, like, now he can control who's on his team. I think they're going to win it
right.
with him calling the shots. And I think now, like, it sounds weird, but, like, Missoula, they trust him. Like, dude, go make the players. I'm going to get the players. We have to trust each other. You're only as good as your players. If they love the coach, dude, no one in this world can coach teams that don't believe in their coaches. If they're the most talented team, is going to go out and win. Now they have the coach and the GM. It's a fine line. It's got to be the perfect combination.
That's why I don't believe these reports that come out that say that, there's a position opening, there's a coaching spot. Like, for example, when Coach Cal left
he's in heaven, he's not leaving
for Arkansas. Like, when Coach Cal left Kentucky for Arkansas, you know, everybody was saying, there's a big spot open. So, Brad Steele, there's one name to pay attention to as who could be interested, and that's Brad Stevens. It's like,
no way.
Why would Brad Stevens leave a high-level position in basketball to go back to coaching?
It's hard for me to even say, but like, I never would have thought about it back in the day. I was mystified why he did that. Now he has more control. Like, he skipped the whole, like, coach for 30 years, 25 years, you know, get yelled at by players, by coaches, by agents, and then finally burn out and, like, you know, work for, like, the Blazers. Or I'm not thinking of Charlotte, but, like, the Nets or, like, some other team. No, he stayed with who he loved. And he went right up to the front office. He was young, too. They were like, okay, you want to run the team? He's like, yeah. He felt he was confident he could make more of an impact drafting and signing free agents. It was brilliant. Not a lot of teams do that. NFL, NBA, really no teams do that. He semi-retired from coaching to call the shots. And this is the best Celtics team since Larry Bird and Kevin McHale.
Actually, I would go further than that. I would go closer than that. I would say it's the best team since 2008.
And Steve, mm-hmm. You must have been like, why is he leaving? He's gone upstairs. It was brilliant. I never thought it would work like this. He was a genius. I was like, he doesn't want to coach? No. Dude, he's tried his hardest. Like, no, now he's going to control who sets on the court. That's a proud franchise, obviously. Now he judges, like, who's going to have the best character, who's going to play defense. Al Horford. A lot of teams would have been like, Al Horford, oh, he's old, he's washed. No, he knows, like, he's a good player. Dude, Ja Rule Holiday. He gets, like, the best. They have the perfect chemistry. Peyton Pritchard. People are like, no, he's too slow. Mm-hmm. Dude, the guy can score 30 points in the playoffs. Pure genius.
Yeah, it's definitely especially when you take a look at all the different things in play. The fact that, you know, everybody of course is wondering why would he go and do what he's done. But then, you know, you also look at, like, okay, so, you know, he's gone up to the, what's it called, the press box, or not the press box, but you know what I mean. He's gone up to being in control, as opposed to, you know, as opposed to actually coaching. And I think it's just the case of, you know, he was probably getting tired of
anywhere
of having, yeah. he was probably getting tired of having to be in charge.
I'm sorry, I thought you said hired. I was going to say he could have gotten hired anywhere. He was like the hottest young thing. Brilliant young coach. And instead of, like, you know, still sticking through it, like, he was like, no, I'm better served. We're going to win a title up top. I've never seen a coach in any sport do that. Think about it. He was just getting started. And he was like, no one was going to fire him, dude. They were in love with him. Like, everyone with a head on their shoulders was like, this guy's awesome. He's like, no, I'd actually like to be GM. He was still really young. Lou, we've never seen that happen in any – I don't think in any sport. It's hockey. Has anyone been like a 41-year-old, like, four-year coach where you have Tatum? You're close to winning it, and you're like, you know what? We're close. Instead of me staying here, I want to actually now run as GM. That was brilliant, dude. I've never seen that happen. Dude, that was mind-blowing. Now it's like, dude, this guy knew what he was doing.
Well, you know, he probably figured
they wouldn't have gotten Holiday or Porzingis. Sorry to cut you off, but like, I see the genius now. Like, I could never see that coming.
Right, but he probably looked at another thing that I remember was brought up at the time was, you know, his family life that. You know, he never really got time to spend with his family because he was always coaching.
Yeah.
You know, so this would be a way for him to also be able to spend more time with his family.
Yeah. I think a lot of guys, like, they take it as like a shot, like a hit on their pride. Like, they're already respected. They're already making a lot of money. You're coaching a pro. That's like the best. That's like being, you know, singing for like Led Zeppelin. Like, you're already the top of the line. No, I still want to stay here and coach and like win it all. He was like, you know what? I'm having fun. I love this team, but you know, scale back the hours. Now you're not like those long flights. Now I can stay in Boston and work the phones and get a holiday for after Pritchard. He saw the long game. He was like, he probably always knew he was good enough to win it, but he's like, now I want to make sure the next coach can win it for us. He was all about the team, about the franchise.
Right.
Dude. We've never seen a coach do that. I cannot name you one example, any sport. Because there's no way they fired him. He was like, I'm going to be a GM. They're like, okay, whatever you want. I don't know. I've never seen that happen.
I can't remember seeing it happen in any sort of place either. Actually, come to think of it,
I might think of this is a terrible example, but just like coming off the top of my head, I'm delirious. But like Mike Keenan, like Rangers, like Mike Keenan or whatever Andy Reid out of the shit and in Philly. But like if he said that, that'd be cool. But like I've never seen it happen because neither one of those did it. Furthermore, more importantly, I've never seen a young coach. Think about it. He was maybe like 45 when that happened, 48. He was just really coaching Tatum. He's like, no, I'm actually
right.
A GM. So it makes it even more amazing. Building a dynasty. They got to get their first one down, dude. They got to notch their first on the belt.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's definitely It's definitely looking bright, I'll put it that way, but they really need to capitalize, like, now.
Yeah.
While they can.
I agree. We've seen the best, we've seen the worst. Like, when you're here, like, you know, every year is different. Tatum, I hope he never stubs his pinky. Hopefully no injuries. Jaylen Brown, nothing happens. When you're here now, everyone's healthy. Got to do it. Every year is different, dude. I mean, they have to maximize this.
Right. Because otherwise, you know, you don't know how many more opportunities you're going to get, basically.
Yeah. How many times have we seen this in hockey or baseball? Or, oh, my God, this team's the next dynasty. And, Steve, I love you. You know probably more about sports than I do, but, like, the one thing I got you on you was, like, Dodgers. Oh, they're going to be the – I'm like, if they haven't won a damn thing yet, Lou, you know that. Like, let's see them win first.
Yeah.
Never give a team a championship. There's so much hard work. There's so much different things that go into it. Maybe the Dodgers hate each other. You know, hopefully Freeman and Mookie Betts are placing bets with the interpreter. But you get what I'm saying? Nothing's automatic. It takes a lot just to win one championship.
Yeah.
And, yes, I hope the Dodgers lose everything. I really do. But, I mean, this is the best Celtics
team. You never know.
This is the best Celtics team. You think it's the best Celtics team of your lifetime?
I still think that the 2008 team was better.
That was a nice camp.
I mean, just being perfectly honest, I think that I still think the 2018 was better.
That was such a
just. I mean, it's kind of hard, really, to
watch that.
You know, to really just to really look at this team and. I mean, their numbers are basically comparable to the 2018.
They are. Changing the guards. Tatum, Brown, they've always been as good as those guys. They just haven't won the ring yet. It's their time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is the best opportunity that they're going to have.
They have to do it. There's no other way around it.
So,
walk the walk.
Yeah. Pretty much. But with that being said, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Sports Whispers Weekly. Thank you to Lou, Alex, and Diane for joining me tonight. Just a reminder, the Survivor 46 recap show will have its finale episode this upcoming Thursday night, as we will look at the Survivor 46 finale, and we will discuss the newest winner that will be crowned this Wednesday night. So of course, that podcast is Thursday. But with that being said, everybody have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you guys next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly.